Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. The first order of business tonight, I think we're lacking sound. Let's see if we can get that fixed. There, is that going on now? Okay. I'll start again. Welcome to the May 5th, and I said Cinco de Mayo, meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Our first order of business tonight will be a public hearing. And that, I'll read the announcement. A public hearing will be held by the Tompkins County Legislature at 5:30 p.m. concerning proposed local law number B of 2015, which is a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County. So we would be happy to take comments on this proposed local law. If you would like to speak, please step to the microphone, tell us your name and where you're from, and please try to limit your comments to about 3 minutes. Martha?
Mike, if we could start with the representative from Energy, what's it called? EIC, to speak about the program. Joe
happy
Del Sindico.
To do that. Happy to Mr. Del Sindico, do you want to speak to us first?
Would you like me in any particular?
If you want to speak to us about it in more detail, please sit right at the front there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are you using the computer for a program?
Yes, but
all right, then we're going to suspend long enough to put the screens down, please.
Okay, yeah, because there was a video I wanted to show you.
We'll have that. And since you're making a presentation on this, we won't limit you to 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
But
I did want to make one comment before I turn the video on, and that is that, as you know, the governor's initiated this program called REV, that Reforming the Energy Vision. We actually had recently completed a financing of a solar panel project for a dairy farm in Orange County, and the governor's office decided to use that as actually the first project to talk about the benefits of this new program. So I actually did ask them for permission to show this video prematurely, because we were going to have the hearing tonight, because I thought it was apropos to some of the discussions I've heard at some of the last meetings. So you are seeing it for the first time, and actually the public is seeing it for the first time tonight. So with that, I'm going to just introduce the video and I guess hopefully go ahead and get it started for you.
Thank you.
My name is Alan Glustoff. I own Five Spoke Creamery. We make raw milk cheeses. Our mission here is really to combine the quality of the milk that comes from our cows with an authentic artisan cheese making process. And our cheeses are sold pretty much throughout the whole country to high-end restaurants as well as specialty markets.
Hey, girl.
It's a modern farm. That means the milking equipment, heating, the cheese-making equipment, all runs on electricity. This area is one of the largest in terms of energy consumption to keep the bulk tank cool, the lights, the milk line, the cleaning. This is a big part of the cost of running a dairy.
People want to see farms here. That's why they moved to Orange County. So combining energy efficiency with dairy farming, and it's just a win-win, and it's really what you want to do here.
We looked at a variety of alternate energy sources, and solar seemed to make the most sense. But financing the solar project was probably the biggest obstacle.
Five Spoke approached my office. They were looking at some energy efficiency and solar panels. We had joined the Energy Improvement Corporation and were offering energized financing.
The Energy Improvement Corporation and its programs called Energize New York started with 14 municipalities in northern Westchester We help property owners move forward with projects mainly by pairing with NYSERDA.
There's attractive terms and direct technical assistance that Energize offers. Instead of having to go figure it out all yourself, there's essentially a one-stop shop, and the county's role is we essentially manage it as a payment on your property tax bill.
The Energize program is a loan, and the way it's structured, where it's paid once a year with the taxes, enables me to use that money from day one.
They made it very seamless, they made it very quick, and the rewards from it are really multifaceted. You have the local engineering companies that are getting the work by installing the panels. You have the local dairy farm now, which is growing and able to produce not only energy, but also energy that goes back into the grid.
I would say at this point, we have more than enough power to meet 100% of our needs, plus then some. There are myriad benefits to using solar. One is a lower cost of electricity.
In this case, the financing was just under 6 years. After that period, with the financing paid off, they won't be paying anything related to energy.
And what that's meant for us is there are certain things we need to do to expand. Now we can do what we need to do to store more cheese so we can make more cheese, so we can sell more cheese, so we can stay in business.
Reforming the Energy Vision, or REV, is New York State's energy policy. We're embarked upon a fundamental change to help bring about this future electricity system, really starting today.
Climate change has had a huge impact on the total economy in New York State. These 100-year storms, we've had five of them in the last 6 years. So when you're able to make these small sustainable pockets related to solar where you can power certain areas, these are going to be positive things. And I think it's a trend that's going to do nothing but continue going forward.
I love that. I'm excited that New York State is really at the forefront of making it possible for people like myself to make alternate energy sources part of their business and lives.
Hey, thank you. I wanted you to see this video in particular because I unfortunately wasn't here when you set the date for the public hearing, but I did have an opportunity to review the video, and there were two things that were talked about at your session, and one had to do with local labor and the other had to do with renewable energy. And I think it was important for you to see this because I think what the video shows is something that is extremely important to us and something that I think we will be accomplishing throughout New York State, and that we are providing a mechanism now through our financing to be able to make renewable energy much more affordable than it has been in the past as a result of our partnership with NYSERDA, with their incentives and our ability to provide financing. Additionally, the county executive in Orange talked about local labor as part of that project. That was very important to Orange County, not surprisingly. I just wanted the legislature to be aware that as members become part of the Energy Improvement Corporation, what we do is we go out into the community and work with the community, and we work with the engineering firms, we work with the contractors, and we work with the property owners to get them educated as to how the program works. And what we have found is that is extremely effective in getting local labor and local companies involved in the projects. So that is something obviously we would do here. We did it extensively in Orange County. We've done it in many of the municipalities in Westchester County. We have a session scheduled next Wednesday in Kingston, with Ulster being our most recent county to join. And the same objective there is to train the contractors, to train the engineering firms, so they become familiar with the program. I also wanted to make a couple of comments regarding some of the things that I heard on the video at the last meeting. And there seem to be some contradictions, which I can understand why they would be, having to do with the ability to amend the municipal agreement that the county signs with EIC. And I guess I'm stating something somewhat contradictory, but the answer is no, it can't be changed. But yes, there are conditions that are available to be added to the agreement. So some of the things that I've heard mentioned by the Economic Development Committee in particular, one specifically asked that the amount of financings for Tompkins County be capped at the moment until the county has a better sense of how those programs are going forward. There was also some conversation about making sure that an applicant was properly qualified. And by that I mean the way our underwriting rules are written. If a property owner applies for an EIC loan, a PACE loan, and they've paid their property taxes on time for the last 3 years, they would qualify along with the other underwriting requirements. One of the concerns that was expressed is what if a property owner is current on that property but may be delinquent on other properties? And that is a very obvious and legitimate concern. So, again, these type of changes can be made in the form of amendments or conditions to the agreement. There was one other mention about interest rates. I really didn't quite understand what that was. But, again, I just want to make it clear for the purpose of the hearing that conditions can be added to the agreement. The agreement can't be changed, but conditions can be added to make the county more comfortable with us going forward. I do want to give everybody a quick update. Since the last time I was here, Ulster County has become a member of the Energy Improvement Corporation. Tomorrow, Orange County and the county executive will be voted to become a member of our board. That leaves two board seats still available for the Energy Improvement Corporation board. We have closed on a $75 million line with the Bank of America. So Bank of America is now committed to purchasing the first $75 million in financing. And there's been a tremendous amount of interest and activity in the program. And right now there are several dozen applications in-house amounting to a little over $20 million in expected financing. So the program is really starting to move forward. As you can see, the governor's office is very much in support of the program. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the chamber has for me that I can answer.
Thank you. Are there questions? Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the movie and for the words, and especially for addressing the concerns expressed about labor. I'm real pleased with the progress that y'all are making, and I think that I won't speak for everybody, but I think that it looks good for Tompkins County in terms of all of our goals and aspirations. One thing that comes up for me, especially as this spreads and as the purchasing power increases, is whether there's been any input or decision-making with regard to buying American and that in that way supporting manufacturing in this country. I could go on, but I think you get the gist of what I'm asking, and you don't have to answer now, but anything that you can keep us informed about with regard to any improvements in this area would really be appreciated.
Absolutely. I understand, and I think one of the things that I think I'm correct in saying, there's going to be a major expansion of a manufacturing facility for solar panels in western New York and in Buffalo. So I'm hoping that that's going to help maintain source products within the state and within the country. I understand your concern, but, of course, you know, it always comes down to competition and who is offering the most competitive price. So that's really between the property owner and the contractor. But I assure you that we're going to do everything we can to educate as many of the local contractors and engineering firms as possible so that the market that you're looking to serve is satisfied by the marketplace and the support services around it.
Thank you.
Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Joe, for coming tonight and for speaking by phone with the Economic Development Committee yesterday. I'm looking at the local law, and if you would just mind explaining two things for the record, for the public and for the record. The first is, please remind us what you said yesterday about the qualified property owner and about a single-family homeowner, I think, so that the public understands who's eligible. And then if you would talk about that last section we just spoke about on Section 9A and B.
Sure. The biggest issue we face with residential is that it's not that we don't want to provide this product for residential. In fact, we want to. The federal government, specifically Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, have objected to PACE financing because they believe it places a lien superior to theirs on a residential property. So basically what's happened is, with the exception of the state of California, all participants in PACE have decided not to provide PACE financing to residential properties. California is challenging the federal government and just they went ahead and did it, but we're not doing it in New York because there's a threat that they'll stop writing mortgages or approving mortgages in the area. So basically the best way to explain it is that if a a residential property could qualify for a guarantee from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, then we could not provide a PACE loan to that property. But we could provide a PACE loan to a residentially owned property, residential property, if it was commercially owned, because it couldn't qualify for Fannie and Freddie Mac. So that's the constraint that right now we're facing. I can tell you that there is a bipartisan bill in Congress right now to overrule that. But right now it's stalled. It hasn't made any progress. But we're sort of hoping that's going to change. But we really don't know what the outcome is going to be. Regarding the local law, I believe you're referring to paragraph 9, sections A and B. And it is a little confusing, but when the legislation was written, it was the emphasis or the onus was going to be placed on a municipality that was going to become a member to provide a report to the authority, which in this case is NYSERDA, that the work and the improvements that are being financed were done in conjunction with the financing plan. We did not want to place that burden on the member municipality. So paragraph A was inserted to notify the municipality that we will be responsible for undertaking that burden, and then we will either submit that report to the authority, which is NYSERDA, or we can send it to you, and you can send it to NYSERDA. So it's really going to give the municipality the option to go either way. But the important is paragraph A that says that we are responsible for giving that report to the member.
Thank you very much. And if we can ask that when, assuming this goes forward and our second resolution on this talks about the municipal agreement that we would negotiate, if that could be put in a clear couple of sentences, that'd make some of us feel better.
I'm sure that wouldn't be a problem.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any, Dooley Kiefer, before you go?
One member of the legislature is absent tonight. I'm not sure I can do justice to what her question might have been, but there is concern locally among members of the public more than this group about allowing existing natural gas equipment to have its life extended when natural gas is not viewed by most in the climate change public as a good bridge fuel. So would that be the kind of condition that could be added to the agreement to not allow that particular kind of improvement to happen?
Well, clearly the goal of the legislation was energy efficiency and renewable energy. And as you saw from the video, it was our financing that made a renewable project possible in New York State that would not have been done without us. So I think the plan here is to try to do everything we can to reduce greenhouse gases in whatever manner we can. And that would include the possibility of gas as a fuel that might be burned in conjunction with doing a project. So I, for one, would hope that the legislature would not prohibit that type of energy efficiency. But at the same time, one of the things that I can assure you is that we are very focused on renewable energy. We are very outgoing in our programs to support solar, and we would work with the county to try to do everything we could to emphasize that as one of the benefits of our financing program.
So did I understand you to convey that we could put such a restriction on, but you would not advise it?
I would not advise it, number one, but I'm not the legislature. So I can only speak on my behalf. However, the conditions need to be approved by our board. And while in most cases there would be a technicality, there could be some concern expressed by the members of the board of the fact that we're trying to address energy efficiency and renewable energy. And if we were to approve that condition, which would basically make it impossible to finance an energy efficiency project in the county, there might be some concerns about it. So, again, I can't speak for the board, but I could understand as a former elected official, I might have some concerns about supporting that.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Are there other individuals who would like to speak on this topic at the public hearing? Wasn't sure whether Peter was going to speak or not. Not being any other speakers, we'll close the public hearing. And would you please stand with me while we open the regular meeting and do the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
I'm here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk has asked to be excused. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Aquí.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I don't believe we're going to need an executive session tonight. John and Joe, is that correct? Okay. I'd like to reorder business briefly so that we could take care of the matter on the public hearing. Martha Robertson, the consultant is here, maybe we could let him go home a little sooner if we moved your resolutions.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I've got Resolution W, adoption of Local Law Number B of 2015, a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Will Burbank. Discussions on Resolution W. Go ahead, Martha.
Yeah, just a couple things. One is we've really been excited about this. Marianne brought it to us 6 or so months ago, and really glad to see this, I hope, ready to happen. I remember a number of years ago when Ed Marks explained to us what property assist clean energy was, and that idea of being able to support people transitioning to renewable or clean or efficiency projects. And then we ran into this headwind with the federal loan prohibitions. So it's really great to know that New York has turned this into something they can do for everything else except residential property that might use a federal loan. So as Marcia writes this up for us, I hope this will go through, and I hope we'll make sure people know this is for commercial buildings. It's for residential, like multifamily buildings that are owned by a commercial entity. It's for nonprofit buildings, and it's a way to really move the market in Tompkins County and improve our carbon footprint, improve jobs. As Joe Del Sindico mentioned, there's training that goes along with where they will EIC will come in and make sure that local businesses and contractors have the skills to make this happen and to respond to the needs and interests of our property owners. So I'm very excited about this happening. Joe just told us that this would we would be the first county or the first entity at all outside of the Hudson Valley if we pass this program and get this started. And I think it's something that I'm very glad we're able to do and would emphasize to anybody listening who's thinks this might be taxpayer money. It's private money. It's all loans, not grants to property owners. And the county's role is simply the administration of that payment on the property tax bill. So it's essentially I mean, very, very low level of effort and risk on the part of the county. So I think this is a big win for us, and I look forward to getting it started.
Martha, thank you, and I agree with you on that. And I think what's so important about this is finally something that we can do for the commercial and the small apartment houses. So many programs have come along in the past, and we get questions, could my three-unit apartment house qualify for this? And we have to say no. But for this loan program, perhaps we can say yes. Are we ready to vote on this? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed.
Mike, may I ask that the reason is based on the question that I asked and have that summarized in the minutes?
Certainly.
Thank you.
You want to do X, too?
And related to that, resolution number X, I guess I should have said the number before. This one's 5519. Authorizing a municipal agreement between Tompkins County and the Energy Improvement Corporation to implement and administer a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County, and I so move.
Seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Discussion?
So briefly, this authorizes the county administrator to negotiate the specific municipal agreement with the Energy Improvement Corporation that would set everything down in terms of responsibilities and everything that we would need to administer this.
Dooley Kiefer.
Do you know if that negotiation will include any conditions added to the basic contract that we can't change?
Well, Joe just mentioned, Del Sindico mentioned that, you know, we would, you know, if we had conditions that we would put on that on the program, that that could be negotiated. I don't have a process to suggest that we. I mean, I don't think one legislator or two legislators raising an individual concern is directive to the county administrator.
No, but something about local labor has been mentioned. I just wondered if. How any conditions might be discussed and added.
Well, Joe is asking the county attorney something. Maybe that's the person we should ask. We haven't talked about that.
Are you aware of the question? Dooley, you want to repeat your question, please?
Giving the county administrator the authority to negotiate an agreement, which agreement can't be changed, but it can have conditions added. My question was, how will any such conditions be discussed and arrived at for adding, and will that be part of this before the agreement gets signed?
Joe Mariana?
Well, the ones that we've talked about, and this is not final or conclusive, but the ones we've talked about, Joe Del Sindico touched on in his presentation.
Yes.
So we've talked about whether an owner is delinquent on other properties. So that's one. We've talked about a maximum amount of outstanding loans. We want to make sure that we have a good handle on this program before we expand it beyond a certain level of outstanding loans. We've also talked about environmentally suspect properties. Are there certain types of properties that lend themselves to real environmental risk or concern? And whether we could somehow identify those and exclude those from financing. Those are the three that we have talked to Joe about.
I'm sorry, what do you mean environmentally suspect?
A gas station, for example. Should we be careful before we get into this arrangement with a gas station, which may have inherent environmental risks attached to it?
All three of those seem very reasonable to me, but I have no idea whether those are going to be part of your initial negotiation.
They would be, yes.
And how were they arrived at? I don't remember a process.
This has been an iterative process. We have had a number of meetings. We've been talking about this for the last year. So through the meetings that we've had, including a relatively large community meeting that had city representatives and county representatives and people from the outside, these were some of the things that arose during those meetings,
mm-hmm.
All of which seem common sense, all of which seem to lend themselves to underwriting criteria that might be reasonably applied. So that was the basis of those three that I just talked about.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing this part of it up, Dooley. What I'd like to say is that in the absence of a majority of the legislature, you know, putting their foot down and saying, we won't do it unless this, I have to say that I think this is a really good direction to go. I'm not happy. It's not perfect. I'd love to see a provision that says that we would buy local or buy made in this country, even if there was a price difference. I think that would be a way of truly supporting manufacturing in this country and supporting it locally. The fact is the majority of the legislature won't vote on that right now, and it's even possible that the claims that we're not yet up to speed in terms of being able to provide manufacturing and alternative energy, not just with solar but in some other areas yet, might have some merit to it. The fact is, by mentioning these things and by making sure that Joe knows that many of us have concerns about this, I believe that it becomes part of the informal conversation. And I'd like to just repeat again what I asked during the question on the floor, and that is, and on your behalf, I'll just like to say, just can we get updates on this as we go forward? I think that there's a way that that has a way of, if not formalizing it, at least making it part of the process, the knowledge that there's concerns about this. And I wonder if that would be sufficient for you to get your yes vote.
Well, I was going, having been outvoted on the earlier vote, I was going to support Joe following through, since we're bound to follow through with what has been decided by a majority. So you don't have to worry about that.
Can I take credit for it?
You can, all sure. Right. Joe, I like your quick summary of the conditions that you understand have general support. I didn't attend all those meetings, so I didn't hear some of them before. So thank you for that, and I hope that we can have a process for considering additions.
Martha Robertson.
I think the hope here is to put something forth that is relative, that is as unencumbered as possible by qualifications and extra details and hoops for a property owner to go through. I would remind everybody there is virtually no taxpayer money involved in this at all, and maybe none if you consider that the program is backed by NYSERDA, which is not even taxpayer money specifically. It's paid. It's funds that come through the REGI. So the loans themselves are private capital. The this is a way to facilitate a homeowner or a property owner being able to do something they've been wanting to do in the private market. And I'd like to make sure that we get this going as quickly as possible. We certainly, and Joe Del Sindaco has assured us that we want to, that we can monitor this, see how it goes, and, you know, we obviously are going to get reports about what kinds of projects have been done, and we can change it at any time and get out of the program altogether if we decide it's not working for us.
Jim Dennis.
I want a roll call vote on this, Mike.
Certainly. Are we ready to vote? Roll call vote, please. We're going to have lots of roll call votes tonight, by the way.
That's good.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
And that is agreed to. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Mr. Delgado, again, thank you for coming and speaking to us today. We're going to move to privilege of the floor, initially for the public. And if anyone wants to speak to us on any subject, you may do so for 3 minutes. We do have a countdown clock at the end of which there'll be an audible signal, and if you haven't concluded, we ask that you please conclude at that point. By signing up with the blue cards, which we need, if anyone wants to speak who hasn't signed one, please do that and hand it up. You're green to the 3-minute time limit. You're green not to raise your voice. You're green not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're green not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. The first card I have tonight is Victor Tiffany.
Victor Tiffany from Danby. I wanted to come back this afternoon and thank this body for their vote of support in opposition, the resolution in opposition to Fast Track. We really appreciate that. If Congress had members that were more like the wise 12 of you that supported that resolution, this country would be in much better shape than it is. 2 years ago, the publisher of the Amendment Gazette, where I am a columnist, wrote a headline, "The TPP is Citizens United on Crack." Just last week, at a rally in front of New York City Hall, Zephyr Teachout, the author of Corruption in America, from Ben Franklin's snuffbox, the Citizens United, stated, quote, "The TPP, if it gets passed, will be known as Congress's Citizens United because it gives corporations greater power, foreign corporations, multinational corporations, greater power than citizens." Indeed. Jim Hightower and Ralph Nader consider the TPP to be a corporate coup d'etat. In fact, Citizens United triggered the corporate coup d'etat in the United States, slow-motion multi-election coup that's still underway. Instead, the TPP represents an international corporate coup de loi, that is, a sudden imposition of chapter after chapter of corporate-created regulations upon the legislatures and local governments of 12 countries. Unfortunately, our representative in the House, Tom Reed, voted to ignore your resolution and voted for the fast-track legislation in committee. So that begs the question, what is it behind the Obama-Reed alliance on this issue? And the answer, in a phrase, is institutional corruption, legalized corruption. Now, granted, it wasn't the same multi-billionaire brothers that backed Reed's election to Congress as it was the Wall Street multi-millionaire bankers that backed Obama and his campaign for the White House, but they have the same agenda, corporate rule. And that phrase ought to send a chill down the spine of every patriotic American. Unfortunately, most people have no idea what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is in what can be called an epic news media fail. So your resolution is important to our movement to help publicize this attempted coup and help stop this effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. Next I have Ithaca Fire Chief Tom Parsons.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'll try to be brief. I'm here to speak to you again about the fireworks sparkler law that you're considering tonight. And I'm asking members of the legislature to oppose the adoption of that law. I think you've heard from myself, my colleagues, Director Shurtleff, fire chiefs from across Tompkins County expressing our concerns about the adoption of this law. We're concerned about the community that we serve. We are the emergency services and the responders that are going to respond to any potential accident, incident, property damage, personal injury that will occur from people using sparkler devices. And we just frankly don't understand where the benefit comes from having this. Certainly the financial benefit is not there, and it just doesn't seem the risk is really worth the reward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Next, I have Jerry Dennis.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here to request, again, a waiver of interest and penalties that are assessed against my past due taxes.
Just want to mention you're from, if you could
sorry?
Tell
oh,
us
I'm
what
sorry,
the town
I'm from
is. Sorry.
I originally appeared before this board to petition for the waiver back in October. And everything was passed back to Mr. Snyder and the county attorney for a review. And in January, I got a court order for, you know, had my name and everybody else listed for past due taxes. And since I had already petitioned this board in October, I didn't see any need to respond to it. And this past Friday, there was a note taped to my door essentially saying, if you don't contact the finance office, we're going to start foreclosure proceedings. You got 30 days. So I'm back here again petitioning and asking that the $1,000 that these interest and penalties have now grown to be waived. My past due taxes are already $2,400 plus. I did have it back in October, but with this cold winter, I had to use it to heat my house. I can set up a payment agreement that I can either discuss with Rick or the chamber, whatever you folks want to do about it. And I'm willing to waive the rules. If there's any questions about this as to why this all happened in the first place, I'd be more than happy to answer specific questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis. Normally we hear from folks, but we don't respond back and forth.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That was the last card I had. Anyone else would have to hand up a card? Then we will move on to privilege of the floor for elected officials. I'm not seeing any. So I think we'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators. And I see Jim Dennis's hand.
Thank you. I am asking you, telling you, requesting that all of you know Lou the hot dog guy who moves from place to place on the commons based on lawsuits and whoever owns the building. And currently he now is ensconced at the Ithaca Press Row, I believe it's called.
Press Bay Alley.
Press Alley. Press Bay Alley. And this Friday and Saturday, Lou will be selling hot dogs for the benefit of the SBCA. And through Karen Fuller, he asked me and any other legislator to drop by on Friday or Saturday and be seen, you know, near the hot dog stand. You don't have to eat one, but you can make a donation to the SBCA through Lou. He has done this many years on the Commons, and I think the mayor and Nate actually took part in that a couple of years ago, I remember, and some of the rest of us have. So Friday and Saturday this week, help the dogs out over at by buying a dog from Lou at Press Bay Alley.
You're making me hungry. Nathan.
I was just curious with what Mr. Dennis just said there, not this Dennis, but what follow-up, what's the next step? I know that we had talked about at the Government Operations Committee last year about a process, but I don't know if it's the same issue or if it's now two confounded issues, so I just wanted to get clarification.
Rick Snyder, can you clarify that?
Well, we did finish the process. It went through GO and Jonathan and their office put together
along with my help, what the final process would be, and we established that as our, part of our procedure. Mr. Dennis went through basically the same process as we were formulating it or right in the very beginning, but the only thing that remained in Mr. Dennis's case was that the legislator had not taken any action to waive any interest or penalties based on the policy. And so that just reverted back then to my office or the finance office, at which point we really hadn't received any communication back from Mr. Dennis. At that point, there was no other follow-up from his standpoint of view. And I think what he's referring to there is, as far as the formal letters, we do send out about five different letters over a 15-month period. So there were two certified mailings that went out. There was two regular mails that went out, and those regular mails were not returned undeliverable. And then the last piece of mail or notice, which what he was referring to, was what I personally delivered last Wednesday. We go to all the properties, and we try to visit with the homeowners or the renters. And in that particular case, I left a letter there. So in that letter, it discloses that they have up until May 29th or the end of May in order to redeem the property. We've had two redeemed properties in the last 6 days, but we hadn't heard anything from Mrs. Mary Banyan or Mr. Dennis. So it's pretty much back in their court since the legislature couldn't take any action to remedy his situation at that point in time.
So, for clarification, is it fair to say that this legislature has not agreed to waive the interest and penalties in this matter?
Correct.
Julie Kiefer.
Well, I'm curious. Was it ever taken up by the legislature? I don't remember that.
It would have had to have been brought to the legislature by a committee.
So if Mr. Dennis had filled out the form that was being developed concurrently, which it's not clear to me he did, it would have gone back to GO.
I don't remember.
And that didn't happen, as far as I recall.
It went through the exact same policy before we had the form filled out, but he went through the same process. And he went. The first process was an appeal to the finance director, which I had made, and that was denied. And then we brought it to GO, and it came to that committee, and it was denied, and it never came to the legislature, except for the fact that Mr. Dennis here came here and addressed the legislature and passed out some information. But that kept the process going for us to create a policy and create a form, but he followed the exact same procedure before we had a formal procedure in writing.
Martha Robertson, then Peter Stein.
Well, I had my hand up earlier, but I want us to finish this conversation first before I change subjects. Whatever the procedure, Mr. Dennis is here. It's generally our, whether it's a policy or an attitude or a strategy or whatever, to work with the homeowner in whatever way possible. So I hope that, I don't know anything about the forms, I'm not on GO and wasn't last year, so whatever is necessary, I hope you'll work out a payment plan. And, you know, I know that, for example, social services has gotten involved in the past. If there's an issue with somebody who can't complete the full payment plan, that's another way to go. But I hope that something can be worked out.
Ditto.
Peter?
Well, I was going to ask sort of the same question. Do we ever do this? Do we ever? So I see a yes and a no, and I don't know.
Well, I can say I've been on the legislature for a lot of years, and unless there was some kind of a mistake, let's say, in the process, for someone to come in and say, I can't pay it and I want you to waive it,
I'm not aware of us ever granting that kind of a request or petition. We have allowed them to work through the payment plans. We stand on our head to not try to take people's properties. But if we did it for one person, then how do we not do it for the next person who asks? And aren't we going to be waiving interest and penalties, which are designed to try to encourage people to pay taxes? Aren't we going to be having a problem with a lot of people?
So you're saying that, as far as you know, we have no history of actually waiving those.
If someone knows a history of this other than that, I'd be glad to hear it, but I don't recall any time.
Thank you.
Martha Robertson?
Well, I guess I would just ask that whatever is owed, put a big box around whatever is owed and work out a payment plan. And for, you know, from my point of view, if that takes, you know, 12 months, that's okay. If somebody continues to work through a debt, that's fine. It's our goal to keep people in their homes. I hope that we can make that happen.
Okay. Dooley?
I do have something else I want to talk about, but I want to go back to Nate's initial question, which I'm grateful for you remembering, because I think although we thought we had set up a procedure with a form, we never really dealt with it in the first case. So we still haven't made use of it. And I'm sure that Rick's description of what he did was sort of parallel to what that process that we set up was. But I don't think that we have tried it yet as a legislature. So I just want to make clear that it has yet to be made use of, the new form. So can I talk about something else?
Well, I think Martha was ahead of you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. I wanted to make an announcement. It could be part of my ED committee report, but in case people listen to the beginnings of our meetings and not later, I wanted to announce that the process has been established for the regional council applications and also the Upstate Revitalization Initiative. That's the $500 million grant, three $500 million awards that the state's considering this year. The deadline for the CFAs, the consolidated funding applications, and maybe for the other, for the big revitalization fund is also July 31st. We're going to have a workshop here in Ithaca at Cultivari on Monday, June 1st, 12 to 2:30. Bonnie Palmer is the executive director of the regional council, headed based in Binghamton. She and probably other state agency people are coming up for that presentation. Again, that's June 1st, Monday, 12 to 2:30, to help people to prepare applications due by July 31st. TCAD is working with the community, sort of heading up, kind of pulling things together from the community's point of view in Tompkins County. If anybody has questions, they might start there. Start with Heather at TCAD. There are two other workshops on the schedule right now, one in Binghamton and one in Delhi, but those are also during the day. So I did put in a message to Bonnie Palmer to see if we might get an evening workshop or move that one. But at the moment, it's noon on June 1st, and hope people will take advantage of the opportunity. Thank you.
Okay. I was going to get Dooley, but someone else want to speak?
Yes.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. Last weekend, as everybody knows, it was sunny, and we once again had another version of Streets Alive with this year, which was closing Hugo Street, parts of Court, and bringing it alive with people and all kinds of people-powered transport, bicycles, rollerblades, pogo sticks. It was just absolutely quite the scene if you happen to get down there. I was asked to go down there and staff a little booth for government officials just to meet the public. I had some very nice conversations. But midway through my time there, I noticed a familiar face, and it was our own Jim Blizzard, who was down in the park teaching a skill I had forgotten he had, Jim is, besides being doing a wonderful job of presenting our faces to the public on a regular basis through our video system, he's also very skilled in terms of the techniques of surviving in using primitive tools. And he had in his hand a stick, and actually two sticks, and showed me how one can, in a matter of seconds, start a fire using just two sticks. I knew this in theory was possible. I'd never seen somebody did it. And pardon me? Yeah. So then he attempted the impossible. And he said, and I can teach you how to do this. And I proved him wrong. It turns out doing this involved getting down on my knees in a very uncomfortable position. But I am so impressed that that Jim had this ability. And I would encourage others to try this. If I'm sure he'd be happy to share this with us.
Okay. Leslie got in ahead of Dooley because she was off. But can we do Dooley? She was waiting patiently.
Can.
Dooley.
Okay.
Thank you. I should say hola. This Saturday at Stewart Park, Miguel Berrios is having a Stewart Park conservation and barbecue. He is a very energetic fellow who is a landscape designer. He's many different things. But he is absolutely dedicated to Stewart Park's preservation and enhancement. And he is going to bring tools for people who want to come down and help remove invasive species from what was once a wonderful, larger bottomland floodplain forest. It's what we know of as the Bird Sanctuary Plus. It's directly south of the landscaped lawns of Stewart Park that most of the public knows. And the temptation is, do good, and also you'll get barbecue. It's this this Saturday, and it's roughly 3:30 till dark. So I hope people will show up.
Thank you. Leslie?
Well, I got excited hearing about Streets Alive. Thank you. I'm involved in some of us, a couple of us at GIAC host a portion of Streets Alive in front of GIAC, and we do it in conjunction with a Cinco de Mayo celebration that is put on with the Latino Civic Association. So that was exciting. This is our second year of doing it, and so we're looking forward to more. In front of GIAC is the Beats Alive portion of Streets Alive. So don't miss it next year. I want to add a couple of really quick announcements. This week, this first week of May, I understand, is Children's Mental Health Awareness Week. And on May 7th is Children's Mental Health Awareness Day. On that day at 7 p.m., this coming Thursday, at The Space, Green Star, The Space, is a program, a play that celebrates ways, it's called Ways We Care. Ways we care for ourselves, ways we care for others. And so our Mental Health Association members there and community members are putting on a play that's focused on celebrating ways we care around children's mental health awareness day. And if you don't go for any other reason, try to go to see Indira Clearborn perform. Our mama's got nothing on her. So the other thing I want to take a quick opportunity to announce is, and I'm going to bring a little bit of flavor, I want to talk about a fight, a boxing event actually, that's coming up on HBO on May 16th. And I'm bringing it up because proudly, we should be proud that one of Ithaca's very own, he was Rochester by way of Ithaca, whichever it is, a young man, a gentleman who trained out of the Greater Ithaca Activity Center boxing gym. His name is Willie Monroe, Jr., will be fighting on HBO May 16th versus Triple G for the WBA middleweight championship belt. So if you don't have anything to do on the 16th and you're a fan of boxing like I am, please tune in and support Willie and his fight. He definitely is a son of Ithaca, and we are proud of him. So I wanted to share that announcement.
Thank you, Leslie. If I could make a comment, I was pleased on Sunday to attend the celebration of life of Stuart Stein. Stuart Stein is one of our previous chairs. He was chair of the Tompkins County Board of Representatives, which was what we called ourselves before we changed the name to the Tompkins County Legislature. I had the privilege of serving with Stuart, and this event was held up at the Alice Statler Auditorium. It was very well attended. More than 20 people spoke about all phases of Stuart's career and life, his education, his family, his teaching, his entrepreneurial skills, his political skills, things that he had been behind, like setting up Mega for Tompkins County, tourism, and support for the arts, to name just a few. It was a happy time, sad too. But it was a celebration, and I'm glad that I'd had the chance to serve with Stuart. We'll be hopefully adopting a resolution a little later on tonight in commemoration of his service to Tompkins County. Sorry we lose someone like that because they give us so much all of the time. Anyone else? Okay. Looking, I think thinking we ought to move some of these resolutions up because we've got an awful long agenda tonight and we don't want to keep people in the audience too long. Why don't we take the fireworks resolution? Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Kiefer was going to move this one.
What number is this letter? Is it?
It is
packet page 81.
Why?
Thank you. Sure, I would like to move the adoption of Local Law A of 2015, allowing for sparkling devices to be excluded from the dangerous fireworks definition as permitted by New York State Penal Law Section 405.5b. This is document 5478. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Discussion. Dan Klein.
I don't have anything to say, thank you.
Oh, I thought you were ready to speak. Sorry. Jim Dennis.
Yes, I am going to support this. I recently walked in downtown Ithaca and purchased 7 boxes of sparklers that I will hold until I'm out of the county if this doesn't pass in July and August, and light them up and then put them in my plastic bucket or metal bucket full of water after we're done. And they were purchased in the city of Ithaca. And I asked the owner of the store how long he's been selling them. He said about 25 years. And, I have respect for fire chiefs and volunteer firemen, and I've read all the emails and hear what you're saying, but I think, I'm just going to vote yes. That's all. I think people should be able to deal with those. I think adults can deal with them with their children, and they've done that fairly well for a very long time. And I'm a yes vote.
Peter Stein.
Yes, when I first heard about this resolution, I remember the days when I went around as a little boy with sparklers and running around and how much I enjoyed them, and I was for it. But, you know, when you're on the legislature, you really learn a lot, many, many times, that the things you vote on, you basically don't know anything about. And I have a great deal of respect for two of the people who spoke on this resolution, namely, I believe they're sitting there, Lee Shurtleff and Tom Parsons, both of whom I know and worked with and had reason to believe that they knew what they were talking about. They made very strong statements, and I don't find any way that I can turn them aside, and I will vote against it.
Other comments? Dooley Kiefer.
Well, I too remember enjoying sparklers when I was little, and I guess I've never outgrown that. I remember being given a chemistry set and making them. Part of my early interest in science. In any event, I would be very surprised if firefighters did not speak against this kind of thing. It's part of their job. That seems acceptable and expected. What concerned me was the idea that these devices are so dangerous. The data that we have been given as to injuries is not specifically broken out for the kinds of sparkling devices that we are proposing to legalize locally. Changing the subject, I did take seriously some of the firefighters' concerns about coming upon a building that was burning and not knowing that there were fireworks of this nature stored inside. That would be a bad surprise and could be dangerous in quantity, burning. So I explored with our county attorney what one could do about that. And most recently this morning, we talked about the desirability of having the Emergency Response Center, which receives 911 calls about fires, aware of where any such devices might be stored so that that information could be part of the responders' knowledge when they go out to fight a fire. That would not be an amendment to our law, but it would be a statement that this legislature could make, that they want to make sure that firefighters are aware of any potentially hazardous materials stored. I don't think these are considered toxic or hazardous in the meaning of the state law, but I think that for purposes of protecting our firefighters, we could do something as a legislature to have such information available for them. I will be supporting this. I hope we can let our community, our wedding planners and party planners, enjoy these quite harmless devices.
Martha Roberts.
Thank you. If we'd heard from any wedding planners or party planners who live in Tompkins County, I might have had a harder time deciding on this. But the only proponents of the proposal were people who sell the devices, and none of them, well, of the public who came to us, and none of them live anywhere near here. So having no sort of prior frame of reference or how to vote on this, I have to give a ton of weight to the people who live here, who serve here, who are who've spoken very passionately about this issue, and I'm not going to support it.
I'd like to speak about it. I will support it. I come at it a little differently, and I certainly have a lot of deference and respect for our fire officials and understand exactly what they're saying and the need for safety. But there are things that we have now that are not illegal. Incense, people light, candles. We store 5 gallons of gasoline for our lawnmowers. We have small propane devices, propane tanks, and not some not so small. There is a risk. What troubles me the most here, and I would have been perfectly happy if New York State had simply said, you know, we aren't going to have sparkling devices anymore, or if it simply said, yes, we're going to allow them. But what it did was it said it's going to be county specific. Every county is going to have to decide whether or not it remains illegal in its borders to have a to have the use of these sparkling devices and threat and the threat of being arrested or if a person sets them off. So that means other counties, and there are already counties adjacent to us who that have at least one that has adopted this local law. That means that if someone goes over to, say, Sam's Club in Elmira and buys a box of sparklers, well, they could set them off in Chemung County, but the minute they bring them into Tompkins County, they've broken the law. They no longer can possess them, and they certainly can't set them off. It's going to lead to confusion. We attract a lot of people here to our state parks, for example. And they'll be coming from counties. They may have them for the 4th of July in their pack, and they're going to have their children set them off or whatever in the parks. Who knows? And they're going to think that they're legal across the state, across the counties. They aren't going to understand that Tompkins County is different than other counties. So that's the problem I have. If the state said no, and I know the fire professionals tried very hard to lobby the state not to pass this revision to the law. If the state had said, let's leave it the way it is, I'd be very happy with that. But with this change, I see a lot of trouble with it being county-specific. If we turn it down, I think it'll come back to us. There aren't a lot of fire possession arrests in Tompkins County now. Whether there will be in the future, I don't know. I inquired of Sheriff Lansing how many activities he had, and there were about 18 complaints last year. Most of them, when the deputies went out, they couldn't find where they were actually being set off, or they couldn't find the right location. So it's this unevenness that has me gravitating toward voting for this. Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. I completely agree that it would be much better to have a statewide standard. And the statewide standard for many years has been basically to prohibit them. As Jim has pointed out, however, it's a law that has not been aggressively enforced. Even here in Ithaca, it has been possible, apparently, to buy them. My fear is that we are setting in motion something that we're going to come to regret as these become much more widely available and used in a very casual kind of way. Are they the most dangerous things in our environment? Certainly not. Propane tanks, Mike, you pointed out, there are many, many hazards in our that we deal with every day, and part of the job of our local fire department is to make us aware of those. But we don't have to willingly just add a new one unless there's a compelling reason. And I've yet to be convinced that there truly is. What I do know is that while most people can use these devices very safely, they're absolutely no problem, they are the single largest cause of injuries, and especially towards very, very young children. And the danger is lies in the misperception that they're totally safe. So I will be voting against this.
Anybody else want to speak first? Jim Dennis would like to speak again.
I don't want to speak. It occurred to me, Nate and I were having a conversation. The red flares that the police put out on the highway when there's an accident or that we burn around the lake and forth. Is that illegal also under this law? Do you know what I'm talking about? Those very bright
flares.
With the temperature, the surface of mercury, when you know, when you are they illegal under this law to have possession?
So there's a pretty long definition in the law of what constitutes a sparkler, and that is not in that definition. So I don't know if it's defined somewhere else in law or regulated somewhere else in law, but it's not in this law.
I'm sorry.
It's defined in the law as a signal.
Okay. Well, all right.
All right. Are we ready to vote on this? I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
Can you just clarify what yes means and what no means?
Certainly. Yes means that we would adopt a local law which would no longer have the possession and use of sparkling devices be illegal in Tompkins County. So it would permit them. A yes vote would permit them. A no vote would be opposed to that.
Thank you.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
6 ayes, 7 noes.
The local law is not agreed to. All right, let's move on.
Can I have some of your sparklers, too?
Absolutely. Meet me by my car.
47 cents.
Are you selling them?
The password is.
Sparkle.
I think we had some mental health resolutions people are waiting for. Peter, we were going to take the mental health resolutions that folks are waiting for.
Sorry.
Or is that Jim's committee?
Yes.
Jim, they're out of your committee.
It's out of my committee?
We're talking about I and J.
It's out of Peter's.
These are bond resolutions.
Oh.
Huh?
There we go. Okay. Page 17. Packet page 17. Packet page 17.
Okay, help me out here.
Yes, sir.
You are asking for resolution I.
Yeah, I'm just trying to help folks that are here from staff and other people
trying
to get through things.
I'm okay with that. Here we go. Authorize an amendment to the 2015 2019 capital program to incorporate renovations of the mental health services building at a cost of $575,000 to execute a contract with Holt Architects for related architectural and engineering services. And I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. Dooley Kiefer.
Yeah. I noticed in the first resolved that it says we're authorizing a contract with Holt Architects for architectural engineering and construction services. Holt is not a construction provider that I know of, and what is intended there, I understand from AREL, is its construction inspection services. So I would like to insert the word inspection in line 3 on packet page 18.
Any objection?
No.
And similarly, to add that in the title of the resolution, so in line 4 it says related architectural, comma, engineering, strike and construction services.
Any objection to that?
Construction inspection, I'm sorry.
No, there's no objection.
Okay, that's added to it.
Can I have a question on that?
Yeah, Mike Sigler.
I mean, it's my understanding this is going to cover the whole nut from everything. So,
right.
I mean, that actually isn't correct. That what she's saying.
No.
I mean, Holt will not be providing the construction, but the construction is included in this amount.
so.
We haven't put it out to bid. We don't know what it's going to cost.
Well, and how is that? How are we setting an amount of $575,000?
Rel Amaro, could you speak?
Grab the mic, Rel, please.
Yes, the $575,000 includes its total project cost. So it includes the construction, architectural engineering, and construction inspection services. So it is everything.
So I don't know if we should reward that. I mean, that's it. I mean, this is, you're saying we haven't put it out to bid, which I understand, but.
Joe, you want to clarify it?
I think so. I think I can. The first $98,000 is a known. It's the amount that we would pay Holt to do the design work and the engineering work and ultimately to do the construction inspection. So that part of the budget is known, and we want to proceed to execute a contract with them to do that work. The balance of it will depend on what the bids, how the bids come in, but our estimate of the total project cost, our estimate right now, including that $98,000, is the $575,000.
Should.
Well, now then I'm confused. I'm confused by the changes you're making. Then, I mean, I understand they're not a construction company, but that $575,000 includes the construction. So
do you want to make the C a small C and just go back?
We're adding this project to the capital program. Is that what we're doing?
That's correct.
Yep.
And the entire project you estimate to cost $575,000. But the contract with Holt is not for that amount.
Correct. It's a subset. It's a part of that overall $575,000 budget. So first we get in the capital program. We estimate the total project cost at $575,000. An element of that is design and construction inspection. That's $98,000. With this resolution, you're giving us, first of all, you're adjusting the capital program and giving us the authority to enter into that contract for design, leaving the balance of that $575,000 available for construction.
Would it help if the title were reworded to say, we're authorizing an amendment to the 2015-2019 capital program to incorporate renovations of the mental health services building estimated to cost $575,000 and to execute a contract with Holt Architects for related architectural, engineering, and construction inspection services estimated to include costing $98,000, which is included in the $575,000 total. That's the gist of what you said, I think. It's a terrible title.
The title is almost as long as the resolution at that point. I think we covered in the resolution. This is common language. It's the total project cost, and the first step is to retain your architects and engineers, and that's generally a part of the first step of this process, which it is here.
So it's if you said the renovations of the mental health services building estimated to cost $575,000 and to execute a $98,000 contract with Holt to provide the related services.
Look, it sounds like it's in addition.
We're talking about too many things here. We need to get this on the floor. Let's see if I think we all know what we're talking about here. We have an objection to the proposed change, and I've got a whole bunch of hands. All right, let's go right around. Jim?
I am retracting my agreement that I'm accepting these words that Dooley's put forward. If you want to change the resolution, make your suggestion, get it voted on. And I'm really sorry I've done that. And if all of you, bear witness, I will never do it again. The resolution will be the resolution. And everyone who wants to change
let's move on.
A motion.
Let's move on. Kathy?
I seconded it, and I never said it was friendly. I was too busy trying to catch up. And
right,
it's not friendly to me either.
All right. Martha?
Okay. New topic. I am not on the Budget Committee or the Health and Human Services Committee or the Facilities Committee, so this is, like, I've heard about this in the wind, and, like, I don't know whether the plan was, Miles is here, hi, Miles, in addition to Arel, I don't know whether this that was in our packet was going to be a presentation that you gave, but I am in favor of this, but I don't have any, I can't understand the documents, the drawings that are supposed to tell me what it's going to look like. If somebody can just describe it, that would be helpful. Or I don't know if you were planning to do a whole thing.
They've already done it.
What's your intention, Arel?
Well,
can you?
All right. Well, then, you want to, let's do it now under discussion of the resolution. Why don't you guys, you want to both come up to the front? You need that.
I guess I'll defer to Joe because I know you've got a lot on your agenda today. So.
Joe?
Right. They were prepared to do a PowerPoint. We said let's be more concise tonight. So Miles and Arel are here to answer any questions if you have any. And if you'd like a really quick description, it's been through so many committees, we thought we'd spare the full legislature.
We're not all on those committees. So, right. A description, you don't have to go through the whole thing, but a description. I appreciate that.
Go ahead, Arel, when you're ready.
Can I ask a quick question while they're getting ready?
I'm sorry, Mike.
Can I ask a quick question to Joe while they're getting ready?
Sure.
The Holt architecture, I'm assuming that was sent out to bid, the $98,000.
You can talk to Arel about the retaining of Holt. I think Holt has had a relationship on this project and this building for some time, so I think Arel can speak to that.
The $98,000 that was sent out to bid to Holt?
Yes.
Okay, so there were other bidders, and they were the...
Well, no, we'd already retained Holt, so we negotiated the fees after we completed the feasibility study. So $98,000 includes the architectural, engineering, and the construction inspection services, so they'll oversee the construction. We've got a breakdown of the total project costs as part of this presentation.
Aren't we required to send stuff like that out to bid?
Well, we did, but we did this over a year ago, actually. We started the project when we did the feasibility study back in March of 2014. So we did the feasibility study first, and that was done first basically to see whether we had a viable project, and we did. And so we'll go through quickly to show what the project includes. The costs and a floor plan showing the proposed changes to the ground floor of the mental health building. I'm sorry.
Okay. Just walk you very quickly through this. The main things that we looked at for this project had to do with the ground floor of the building, access, safety, client flow through it, and creating centralized reception on the first floor for the whole building. And we also looked at environmental improvements generally. This was a study that took 10 weeks. 4 meetings were involved. We initially did programming. We interviewed the user groups. Developed a space program, then developed a conceptual floor plans, which we reviewed with them, including furniture plans, and incorporated small adjustments, comments from the users, and then developed construction costs, working with Arel and project costs. The building on Green Street that you know, the interesting thing about this is that when you look at this building from the outside, you really can't find where you can't see the front door. This was the starting point. When you look at the building, even here you're looking straight in, you're really not quite sure where the door is. And this is one of the things we wanted to solve. As you get closer into the arcade, you begin to get a hint of where the door is. It's on the left as you get closer. And there is the door. And then there's the door looking straight on. And when you go through this door, you're in a vestibule. You actually face this blank wall. And there's a door on your left, glass doors, and there's another set of doors on your right. Here's a picture that shows all three views at the same time. And here's a view that shows that with a fisheye lens, it's distorted, but you can get a sense of it. The door on the left is the door, with the glass doors. That takes you into the elevator lobby of the building. And from this point, you can get into the entire building. So anybody can get this, can walk in to where this picture was taken, and you can go up and you can go to any floor in the building. You don't have to go by anyone. There's really no security at all. If you look the other way when you come in the door to the right, it's more solid. You see those tiny little windows there. When you look open through that door, you come into what is a reception desk, and this is for the ground floor programs for mental health. This is a floor plan where just to show you where we were, and if I can point with the pointer. The sequence is you go down this long exterior arcade, and this is where you had to turn to come in. And you, in this vestibule, you either go up, and this is where the elevators were, or you go down, and you're in this lobby area. So the problems were that there's really no control. There's no controlled access into the building. People don't know where to go when they're first coming there for the first time. They're lost. And this is not very conducive to making a welcoming building that will calm people, particularly mental health clients that might be agitated to start with when they approach this building, that it's really not helping them with all of this wayfinding is so difficult. When you come inside, this is what the space looks like. This is the current reception desk, which is sort of piggyback desk, one behind the other. There's a very large spiral staircase in the middle of the space that gobbles up a lot of room. It's very sculptural, but doesn't really take you anywhere. It's not the main stair. In fact, it doesn't even meet current code for exiting this staircase. But it does prohibit you from seeing very well and in terms of security within the lobby. That's the doors into the space. And it's a two-story space with a lot of high windows and glass that face both south and west, so there's a lot of issues to deal with glare and sun control, which we were going to address as part of this renovation. I mentioned we did a space program to sort out what the new functions would be, the main point being that we're creating centralized reception at this one point for the whole building. Currently, there are only three people in that area. In the new plan, there would be seven people. And this is the proposed floor plan. And again, let me point. This is the arcade on the way in. And you notice now, at the end of the vestibule has been pulled out of the building. And so that when you're approaching the building, you actually see the doors as you walk towards. And you don't have to turn when you go through the vestibule. You actually go straight through in a single shot, and you're inside. So it's very simple, very intuitive, very directed. You don't even have to have signs to understand. You simply walk towards the building, and you're inside. This is a blow-up of that area. So, again, you've come in. This is the new vestibule. You come in, and once you're inside, you're very close to the main reception desk. This is an L-shaped desk with two people at it. There's another greeter desk here very close to the door where a greeter could be or a security guard if that was necessary. And then this whole area here, this wide area, this is the central reception component. It has seven people working in it, two at the front. There's one that's tucked behind in a more private situation where people need more private intake. And then there are a couple of staff people that work that answer the phones. And in back, there's a small office. This is a complete secured unit. It has a door at the front and a door at the back, so the staff is safe and secure. And then for the clients coming in, it's very easy to get checked in. They're very close to the check-in reception area. The waiting chairs are at the exterior windows here. There's 15 chairs. We're also creating a new toilet here in this area so that the clients do not have to leave this area to use the bathroom, which is a lot safer. Otherwise, they have to go all the way to the other side of the building and leave the secure area. Was there anything else? Let's see. We talked about the cost, and then there's something here on the schedule. Assuming we got approval for this in May, then the design would take 2 months, the architect's work, and then it would go out to bid and takes a month in July, come back to you for a final approval in August, and then the construction would take 3 months, September through November. The project should be completed by the end of this year. Do you have any questions?
Martha.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. I'm trying to understand what the function of the space is currently and who's, like, so it looks like if I try to compare the two floor plans, it looks like that space, it's relatively unused. Is that right?
Which space are you referring to?
This is existing?
An existing space?
The space that you've turned into where those the line of offices that goes along the line of the yeah.
Where's the existing?
It's further back. This is the existing plan.
I mean, I've never been in that part, so it yeah. That...
Which area do you mean back here?
No, lower down in the... No. Yes.
Oh, this area now?
It seems kind of relatively unused. So
right now, this is a small lobby, and it does have these two desks in it. And this is where they do have reception for the programs that are on the first floor of the building. There's a large meeting space here. Back in this area, there's an art room. There's two group rooms. There's a small computer room. So there are various services that happen on the first floor, and they're currently controlled from this station, but it only has two people in it, and mental health would like to expand centralized reception and increase this to 7 people and basically use this as a check-in point for the entire building.
Okay, and so and because you're taking out the spiral staircase...
Right, that'll give us more space.
Okay,
right.
This looks great, and I completely support it, and I appreciate having the walkthrough.
Sure, thank you.
Julie.
I, too, found that extremely helpful and clear. Thank you. I have a question on what was our packet, page 46, which is page 12A of your handout.
Oh, yes, that's on the second floor.
Yes. And at the bottom left, it says open to below, and it's a large space. What is that? It's just.
Let me go back to the photographs. This lobby is partly two-story. This is the picture of the two-story part of it. If you look at the screen, you can see how it goes up two stories there, and there's high windows. And that part of the space will still remain two stories. That's not going to be changed. The spiral stair that you saw sits in that space.
It's just a bigger space now that's open.
Yes, you'll be able to see it more with the spiral stair gone. Exactly.
Does that create more glare?
I didn't spend time on it, but part of our proposal, and let me go to a floor plan. Yes, you can see it here. You see these dotted rectangles outside the building in front of each window. These would be sunshades that would be added to the outside of the building, both at the first floor level and the second floor windows, as well as windows that are on the second floor along this side. And I can go to, let me show you those 1 second. This is the plan of the second floor, and where that double height space was, again, there are 3 windows on this side and 2 here. All of those windows will get exterior sunshades so that it'll keep the sun from coming in, which will help with heat gain, and it will make much less glare in the space, much more pleasant environment for people using computers and whatnot.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. Jim, I think we're back to the resolution. And is there someone who wants to propose an amendment to the title? Not seeing anyone.
I've lost it.
So are you saying you'd like to move an amendment to the title?
I would definitely like to move an amendment to the resolved, the second resolved, so it says architectural, engineering, and construction inspection services.
Is there a second for that?
That's...
Is that accurate? I wasn't sure.
That's accurate.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's accurate.
I got that.
Martha's seconding it. Discussion on the amendment. Ready to vote?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it, we don't want it to seem that they're actually doing the construction. I appreciate that.
Ready to vote on the amendment. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One, two, three. Keep them up. Four, five. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Those opposed? One, two, three, four. Are we missing someone? Let's see the opposed again. One, two, three, four.
I don't see a fourth hand.
One. We got Kathy. Oh, I think we're missing. All right, we got. I wasn't seeing Glenn.
Jim, Glenn, Kathy.
And we had on this side somebody. We have Dave on the side. Okay. All right, so that is, does not have eight votes, so that amendment fails. On the back on the original motion, are we ready to vote?
There are some other small things. I tried to deal with this at budget today, but I wasn't at the committee, so I wasn't able to. There are just some grammatical things that need dealing with. I can give them to Kathy. I can go Kathy Covert, or I can go over them now.
I need to make a correction. There were nine votes, yes, not seven. So the amendment was agreed to. I apologize. Go ahead, Dooley.
Do you want me to give the grammatical changes to Kathy Covert?
Mike, there aren't 14 of us here. Nine plus five is 14.
Nine plus four is 13.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. Yes, if you have grammatical changes, could you just turn them in, please?
I can. And last, I will try to improve the title to make it clear. I don't know if I'll get a second, but I'm going to make one more attempt.
You want to move another amendment?
I do. I'm going to read it, the whole title. Authorize an amendment to the 2015-2019 capital program to incorporate renovations of the mental health services building at a cost of $575,000.
Is there a second for that?
No, and I'm continuing. The title is already very long. And as part of that, to execute a $98,000 contract with Holt Architects for related architectural, engineering, and construction inspection services. That's the revised title.
Is there a second to change the title the way Dooley just read it?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing a second. So back to the original resolution as amended by the First Amendment. Are we ready to vote on that? Takes a roll call vote. Please call the roll. No, I'm wrong. This is a two-thirds vote, not a roll call vote, unless you want a roll call vote. We got lots more coming. All those in favor of this resolution to authorize the $575,000, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Jim, I think if we proceed, if we proceed right down your list from I, we go to J next, and then go right down the list, I think we can take care of what most people are here to hear about tonight.
Can we put the screen up and turn the lights on?
I don't know. Are we done with the screens? All right. Then we'll suspend long enough to put the screens up.
All right, let me find out.
Okay, Jim?
Yes, Michael. Are we starting with F?
We're going to go, no, let's go to J.
J, okay.
This is the bond resolution for the $575,000.
Okay, all right. Bond resolution. This is 5585, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $575,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay for a portion of a capital improvement project at the county's mental health building. I will move that.
Sir, second. Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. Joe, I know you had some papers. Has that been handed out to everybody?
It has, and Kevin handed out the corrected version, which is now a front and back one page. I had misnumbered the resolutions. So as we go down through here, you should have a piece of paper in front of you that explains in short form what the projects are that are being financed. I can't promise you that it goes in the same order as your agenda, but if you look at the resolution number or letter, you should be able to follow along and see what the project is. I also want to anticipate one question that we might as well start here, which is whenever it says pay a portion, that is standard bonding language. It just means that if the county ever chose to put additional money in, it doesn't preclude that from happening. So that's common language in any bond authorization. I think with that, that's all I have to offer.
So, Jim, you moved J, and there was seconded. Discussion, Martha Robertson.
Well, Joe, I don't know if I have the right one. On the front of this, it's got resolution M for $800,000. And the back starts with K and goes out of order. And then my packet, resolution M, is $200,000.
Well, we may have...
It's all different.
Okay. We may have messed up the lettering again. If you go to the narrative, forget about the resolution number. So you should be able to look at the narrative of these bond resolutions. I don't think the 575 is in this one, but the rest of them are. So maybe the easiest way to do it is look at the amount, and that should track back to your resolution. And then when you look at the bullets for each of those, it should explain...
Joe, as we move, perhaps you can point out on the sheet where they should be looking from resolution to resolution.
I might also say that, you know, having gotten a bunch of stuff when I sat down here, and this is suddenly have to read all this, and I see it, middle of the first page, it says the 2015-19 capital program, excluding the individual PAR forms for each project, is attached. I don't...
Right. Originally, on the original one, it was... And then when the corrections were made, we didn't include that. So if you want the capital plan, I have a copy of that, too.
You have multiples of that?
I do.
Jim Dennis?
Am I correct in assuming, Joe, that all of the things that we're trying to bond here have been previously voted on and approved by the legislature? They're part of the capital program,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, the only one that wasn't was the mental health project, and you right. just approved that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we move? All right. On J, are there questions? Are you ready to vote? Roll call vote.
Mrs. McPhee and Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. And does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous.
Resolution K, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $800,000 serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of various capital improvement projects at various county facility, and I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Ready to vote. Roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera? Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change his or her vote?
Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
A resolution M, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $200,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing certain existing bridges local within the county. And I'll move that.
Which one is he doing?
Did we skip L?
I think we skipped L. Jim, I think you skipped L. We could do M and come back to L.
I'll do that.
Let's do L.
L, bond resolution, $1 million, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, you want to do the other one first, and then we'll come back to the $1 million? We'll do M, the $200,000, and then I'll come back
You've
to
moved
L.
You've resolution M.
M.
Is there a second for resolution M? Dave McKenna, discussion. Let's vote.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Sí.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wants to change her or his vote? Announce the vote, please.
Ayes 13, noes 0.
That's unanimous. Let's go back to L.
Okay, we are back at L. I am so sorry. Third grade education. A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1 million in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of road and highway system reconstruction and improvements at various locations throughout the county, and I will move that.
Is there a second?
Second
by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Martha?
Well, the back page of this thing says up to $1.2 million, and it also says this is the second year of a plan, and in the second year it would be $1.8
million. I'm sorry. What are you looking at, Martha?
Okay.
Where is it?
The top of the back page of your explanation.
Right.
Which says resolution K, but I think it's supposed to be L.
Right. You can follow. Here's what we did. We took the numbers from the budget agenda and put them on here and said, if you follow an order now,
okay,
as I am,
right,
you should be able to track down through the resolutions.
Okay, so this is L. So
yep,
the title of that says $1 million for road and highway.
Right.
And then the second bullet down, the plan is to, yep, issue $1.2
million, yep,
each year.
Right.
And this is the second year of the plan, the right, second year seeming to be $1.8
million. No. I'll explain. So as you read that bullet, the bullet is correct, the second bullet down. So in the revised capital improvement plan that we did a few years ago, we have a highway plan that funds a certain amount of money every year for the long haul for road and bridge improvements, generically. So in the first 5 years, and that's that first block, 2014 to 2018, the commitment is $1.2 million. But in the capital plan, it's not distinguished between how much for roads and how much for bridges. So it's a five-year block. The next year's block, it bumps up to $1.8 million. The next five, and then in the last 5 years, it jumps up to $2.4 million. So in each five-year block, we're stepping up our debt-supported commitment to roads and bridges. So the note means we're now in the second year of the first block of commitments. And then as you read down, in this allocation, we're taking $1 million of it for roads. And when you go down to the next resolution, the other $200,000 is for bridges.
I got it now. Now, if I could just make a generic comment, which is that some of us haven't memorized the capital plan. And don't, you know, we maybe voted on it a couple years ago in a big fat document. And don't necessarily remember when these things come up. So that's, I guess, the source of the Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Ready to vote on this one? Roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
Ayes 13, no 0.
That's unanimous.
Resolution N, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $500,000 serial bonds and notes at the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of reconstructing and resurfacing a portion of Brookendale Road, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion? Ready to vote? Roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
Ayes 13, no 0.
That's unanimous.
A resolution O, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $750,000 serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of reconstruction and resurfacing a portion of South Street, and I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Roll call vote, please.
I'm sorry, Dulles
got her hand up.
What is the status of the design for that project?
Jeff Smith, can you help us there? Our highway director?
I can try. Ola, right? Cinco de Mayo. And all that. I was talking today with Scott Doyle, who has been working with a consultant to fund the design early stages, and his own words were that there's it's a general design, and there's multiple ways that they're proposing to fix this area of sloughing off, and that at this point and with this money moving forward, it should be time to get our, you know, get some people together and start deciding on a final design.
That was my impression, that the design does not really exist yet. Thank you.
All right, are we ready to vote? Roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yeah.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
I want to find out what's so funny about it. Yes.
I'm just trying different voices. Okay. Glenn and I.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Aye.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
Ayes 13, no 0.
Mr. Chair, before we move to the next one, with this particular project, I am not on the relevant committee, so I will not see the design, but I would appreciate it if the legislature, or at least that I could be updated when there is a design. I'd like to know the details.
At the, which resolution are we talking about? Which project?
South Street in Ulysses.
South Street. Can we see that happens? I'm seeing a nod in the back from and a wave from Director Smith, so I think that will happen for you, Dewey.
Thank you.
Resolution P, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1 million in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of reconstruction to a storm water drainage line at the county's public work facility on Bostwick Road. And I'll move that.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Leslin McBean Claiborne. Discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
Ayes 13, no 0.
That's unanimous.
Resolution Q, authorizing a bond reso authorizing the issuance of up to $367,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins to pay a portion of a capital improvement project at the county's Caswell Road landfill, and I'll move that.
Is there a second?
Segundo.
Seconded by Nathan. Discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
Ayes 13, zero, noes 0.
Resolution R, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1,864,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of capital improvement project at the county's recycling and solid waste center, and I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion? Martha Robertson.
This one is a mystery to me. We just did a big project at the solid recycling and solid waste center. I'm really surprised.
Barbara Ekstrom, the solid waste director, is here. Maybe she can shed some light on it.
That we now have to have an almost $2 million bond authorization. And I notice under Q, it said the annual debt service is paid by solid waste fees. I'd be interested to know if that's also true for this one.
What you saw a few years ago was an expansion of the recycling center. This is primarily what we're planning to allow for maintenance for the next 20 years. Many of the items include roof repairs and possible replacement, push wall replacements, pavement, and those are primarily the construction items, equipment, conveyors, pit repairs. The baler is going to need to be replaced. It's 23 years old. And there's a commercial recycling area that's going to need improvements. And there is probably the need for a yard waste chipper to make it more efficient to transport the yard materials. There's a food waste expansion that's going to take place. And there's planning and design. Roughly speaking, there'll be a cost of $800,000 in the first 2 years, and in the last 3 years, it's $1.1 million. Of course, if anything will come in less than that, that's my job to make sure we spend as little as possible. But this building has not been had significant replacements to maintain the integrity of the structure and the paving.
Okay, you said $1.1 million in the last 3 years?
I'm sorry? I said $1.1 million in the last 3 years, $800,000 roughly in the first 2 years.
So that sounds like $5 million.
No, I said $800,000 plus approximately $1.1 million, which adds up to $1.9 and change.
The first 2 years total $800,000, not $800,000 each of the first 2 years.
The total for the first 2 years is $800,000. The total for the last 3 years is $1.1.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And to answer your question, yes, we wind up paying for debt service through our solid waste annual fee.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? Roll call, please. This requires a two-thirds vote.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Use your microphone, Peter.
Aye.
That is tight.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Sí.
Ms. Herrera?
Sí, como no.
Ms. Kiefer?
Sí.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
Ayes 13, noes 0.
That's unanimous. I can never remember on the legislature doing that many roll call votes in an evening, let alone in a row. So thank you for your indulgence
thank
on that.
You, Kathy.
We're all about setting records.
It is time for our break. Hopefully let's take 10 minutes and come back at about quarter of 8. Going back to number 9, I don't think we have any report from county staff tonight. Are there resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim Dennis.
Michael, I have a resolution to add in honor of former Tompkins County Board of Rep member Stuart W. Stein, and I would like to add that.
That's resolution BB.
BB.
Is there a second to add that?
Can we second it by acclamation if people are so interested?
Yeah.
We'll do it.
A unanimous second.
Unanimous second to add it to the to the agenda. All right. Thank you for that.
Sure.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carried. That's unanimous.
Has this been printed up already?
Should be in your packet.
Oh, yes. No, I mean, is there the version that you're going to give to the family? Is there a special version?
I don't think it's actually been done yet, has it? We will.
Well, I would like to suggest one change that you refer to the mentor as a who and not a that, because he's a person. I'll turn that in.
All right, thank you. Martha.
Did we skip county executive, county attorney, county administrator, and finance director reports?
I probably did. For some reason, I got a check mark there, but I guess I didn't do that. But are we done with resolutions to be added or withdrawn? All right, then let's go back, and I do think we should hear from our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Well, first let me apologize for the confusion in that report. So what had happened, we had the report ready with all the resolution letters aligned with your agenda, and then when I looked at the budget agenda, the letters were different on the resolutions there, so my brain went to align it with the budget. So that's the source of the confusion. So I apologize for that.
May I interrupt?
Yeah.
If you'd have put it on a PowerPoint, I know it would have been absolutely accurate.
Well, no, it's...
Never mind the printed paper stuff. Just put it up on the
I'm sorry about that. I'm going to limit... You have a very long agenda. I'm going to limit my remarks to one quick acknowledgement and thanks, and then I'm going to ask Paula to step up. She has a couple of updates on a couple of items. We'll both go quickly. On the acknowledgements and thanks, the Energize New York... resolutions that you passed tonight are really important, and I really appreciate all the time that all of you took to come to understand that. It's not simple, it's complex, and you took time on due diligence to figure it out and to make sure it was right for us. I also want to acknowledge Ed Marks and Katie Borghella, who really have stuck with this since it was a concept 5 years ago and just wouldn't give up on it until Energize came along and have really, I mean, if I brought it to you, it's because they tapped me on the shoulder and said, this seems ready for prime time. So the work they did was really admirable. And the last thing I'd say on that, in these new arrangements, it's not only how the lawyers write the deals and what the I's and the T's are in the agreements, it's also the people you deal with. And through this process, we came to know Joe Del Sindico and his group and found them to be of high integrity, very responsive, never shirked from any question we asked them. So we should all feel good about the relationship that we're about to enter into with that group. So I just wanted to say that before we moved on to the implementation. And that's really all of my report. I will ask Paula, though, if she would, to just update you on a couple of things that she's been involved in.
Paula Younger is our Deputy County Administrator.
Thanks, Joe. Good evening, everyone. At the last public safety meeting, there was a discussion about possibly having an RFP generated to find an expert to do an investigation on the Hornbrook Road incident, sort of an after-action report and an analysis, but with an eye towards how might we do some things differently heaven forbid there is a next time, but how we might do that. And I brought to the committee the option of researching technical assistance through the Department of Justice to see how you might get that kind of assistance at very low or perhaps no cost at all. What I wanted to do is just to let you know that I have continued with that search for technical assistance options. Clearly, with some of the things that have been hitting current headlines, it's been a little difficult. And during my first couple of calls, I was told, well, just sort of stand in line and we'll get back to you. But the folks have been very responsive. I wanted to let you know that I am looking at a couple of programs offered by the Bureau of Justice Assistance, which is under the larger DOJ umbrella. There are some programs that are specific to individuals that have substance abuse and mental health issues that have come into contact frequently with the criminal justice system. Those programs might apply to some of the needs that we have here. There is also a program that's called the Collaborative Reform Initiative that really deals with looking at long-term systemic issues within law enforcement. But I had an opportunity to talk with the project director, and he also happens to be the gentleman that designed that program, that actually said that was a little too over the top for our community, but that there are specialized programs that they also do, and that our needs would fit very nicely with them. The challenge there is that the program that they offer is not currently covered under a technical assistance umbrella that is funded by the federal government. But he and I had a little conversation. I took him back to old school. Now I'm going back about 15 years ago when I used to travel in that arena. And so he agreed to have a couple of conversations with his federal partners to see if there's something that he can do for us. Lastly, I had an opportunity to talk with a former colleague of mine who is with the International Association Chiefs of Police. He is currently the director of what they call strategic partnerships. He actually said that my telephone call to him was quite timely, that it is these kinds of incidences within local communities and smaller communities like ours where the IACP is trying to have an impact. Now, there again, they are a nonprofit organization. They do these kinds of incidents analyses on their own, but of course, if we were to ask them to do that, there would be a cost. However, ironically, they happen to be a subcontractor to the Bureau of Justice Assistance, which is that larger technical assistance umbrella I mentioned a while ago. And as fate would have it, the person that is the current project director for the larger INTAC project used to work for my colleague at the IACP. So at the end of our conversation today, he plans to pick up the phone and have a talk with them as well because, of course, resources are not as plentiful, and he understands that we have a cost issue on our end as well. So those things are underway. I also went ahead and set up a standard procedure. I went ahead and set up an account with the Bureau of Justice Assistance under their National Training and Technical Assistance Project so that they are aware that we are looking for assistance. By setting up that account, they agreed to have a conversation with me, but I didn't have to fill out a complete application, which is very, very time-consuming. Once again, timing was on my side. They have a weekly review of these requests. They call it their public advisory panel. That meets every Wednesday. They are going to sit down and talk about all of the requests they have on board tomorrow, and they are going to include the conversation that I had with one of their representatives, and I should know later on this week whether or not I need to complete a full application and whether or not they are interested in helping us out. So I know that was probably a longer briefing than what I thought I was going to give you, but I thought that you should have a full sense of where we are with this.
Thanks very much. Questions?
That's what I call working the jelly.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you,
Paul. Shall we move on then to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood?
I don't have a report.
All right. Our Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
I just wanted to bring you an update on our upcoming foreclosure auction.
And one of the sheets, I know you have many before you, but you'll probably be able to find this sheet, which is a small spreadsheet that lists the auction properties that's coming up. It's front and back. First side is residential foreclosure properties, and the back side is a commercial foreclosure, commercial or vacant properties. I wanted to share this with you because last year, around this time, we didn't bring you a list to right before the auction. It's almost 2 months until the foreclosure auction, so I thought I'd bring it to you much earlier. That way, those who are concerned about constituents, people in your towns, villages, you might be able to look at that list, know somebody, talk to some people, and find out if there's anything that you can do to assist, help bring them into our office in almost every case. And I say almost because I have a pretty thick file here with me tonight. We have thick notes on just about every customer on these properties. We have detailed descriptions of the letters that have gone out, whether they're certified letters, U.S. regular first-class mail letters. We have descriptive notes on the phone conversations we've had. So by the time you get this, we've probably had an extraordinary amount of dealings with that particular customer. There is a rarity where the person is just out of state. There is a rarity when the address is unknown. We've dealt with just one of those yesterday that Will Burbank brought to my attention. We haven't been in communication with the property owner, and now as a result of going out on the property tour last week on Wednesday, I went and visited each of these properties. So those who hadn't maybe received the mail, or in the rare case that they didn't know that their property was already in foreclosure, they got that legal notice stuck right in their door. Or in about 50% of the chance that I actually spoke to them. So as I go out and I speak to the property owners, I do get to see about 50% of them. So what I wanted to tell you tonight, since you have the list now, it's a little bit shorter than the list we shared with the GO committee. And at that point, we had 17 residential and 19 vacant or commercial parcels for a total of 36. The list is down now. We've redeemed because people have come in and they had the wherewithal to redeem these properties. It's down to 17 and 17 for a total of 34. The planning department's going to be preparing their foreclosure report. Their report usually contains recommendations which parcels, if any, that they would like to have withheld from sale. Scott Doyle will be bringing that 2015 foreclosure report to the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee on May 20th. And then we'll also be bringing this back to the Government Operations Committee at their May 26th meeting. So we'll have looked at these properties at least twice at the GO committee level. I have a narrative on each property which goes along with the spreadsheet. I plan on emailing you the narrative because of the length of it, and I didn't want you to lose it. So within the next day or two, I will be emailing each of you a small narrative that goes on with each property. Dooley Kiefer has asked for if there's information available on whether it's owner-occupied or rental, that I should note that. So I've gathered some information on that. I'll try to make markings in that narrative that will show you clearly if it's owner-occupied or renter-occupied, or if we just don't know. Some cases we just can't tell. But in most cases, when it's owner-occupied, we usually have that documented. The last remark I would let you know is that we will be bringing this back to the legislature at the June 2nd meeting so we can have any further discussions that you might have questions or other comments on these properties. And I would just let you know that the actual auction is scheduled for June 22nd. And that's all I have for tonight.
Thank you. Questions? Will, then Martha.
Thank you, and thanks, Rick, for clearing up the specific question. I actually have another specific property that I've actually gotten some messages from constituents on, maybe others as well, having to do with a property that's adjacent to Ithaca Falls. And a concern that that
Lake Drive or Lake Road.
Lake Road. And I wasn't seeing that on your list.
There are three additional properties that are City of Ithaca foreclosures, not our foreclosures. Okay. But we did visit those also because they will be added to our auction list. So there was originally four City of Ithaca parcels. One has been redeemed, and I say that property that you're talking actually is two pieces of property. There's the property where the house sits, and then there's a property that kind of goes around it. And so, yeah, we did visit that and look at that. But
so the concern being raised by is that this has a lot of development potential, but it also really could, that were something to be built there different than what is currently there, could dramatically change the aesthetic qualities of the falls, and could that be held back from auction? And you say it's a city process, but do we have any say in that?
I'm not really sure. Usually the way it happens that when the city forecloses on their properties and we include them in our auction, and I'm not sure if we have any say at this point on a city-owned piece of property. Jonathan, would you know?
Well, we don't have to auction any property. We choose to do that. I mean, we can always withhold things from the auction if we want to. If you mean put restrictions on future use...
No, I just withhold from auction pending a study of the situation, basically to get some time.
Right, but I mean, the issue would then be to what purpose? I mean, either we hold it or we sell it. And obviously, if we sell it and it has to be developed, any development would have to be approved but through the city process. In terms of us, I mean, either we take it, but either we can sell it or we can, through the auction or through a different process. But there's really, you know, in terms of putting future restrictions on the use, I guess I'm not really sure maybe
okay.
What you're asking.
Martha, then Kathy.
Yeah, the city is aware of the sort of interest, alternative interest in that, those two parcels. They, at a meeting earlier this week, they were talking about would the county be willing to forgo our taxes on it if the city withheld, you know, kept it and made a park out of it or did something. I think the taxes for us are on that parcel are something like $2,700 or not a lot of money. Anyway, so Nels Bone from the city is talking to Ed Marks, who talked to him about what the process is. It's in the works, and there's definitely an awareness this is, you know, a piece of land that has some unique characteristics.
Yeah.
And Ed pointed out that when we have a property like, you know, where we think there may be an alternative use, maybe the the Finger Lakes Land Trust could be interested, we will end up sort of holding back a property for a year while we kind of look at the options. So it looks like they're going to do something like that.
Okay. Kathy?
So this is in my district, and it's my understanding that what would be done exactly, as Will said, is a study. The idea is the city's trying to figure out how can we handle this because it's a tourism issue, it's a view shed issue from every direction you can imagine. And the idea that they have floated is that they would gather more information on possible uses and possible ownership transfers that would, on their end, have something to do with not making it a park necessarily, although that's a possibility, but also some kind of tourism focus. But on our end of it as the county, my understanding is that we wouldn't be precluding any usage of it. We would just be doing a courtesy to the other municipality, just as has been done for us, as Martha pointed out, to allow them time to do a study and figure out what they want to do with it.
Right. If I could explain one difference. Unlike with the other municipalities, we are not foreclosing on this property. The city is. So the city could always choose not to do that. It would be another year or so before they would have any issue with the county. So it's a somewhat different situation.
As you mentioned, and this was good, though, we could choose not to foreclose. And
right, but exactly. But this is one of those circumstances where we are not foreclosing.
I'm sorry, we could choose not to auction. And is any portion of this, not to take it to auction, is any portion of this, are there county taxes at all involved?
Well, not at this point. I mean, when they pay off, it would be for all taxes, but they're not in. I mean, typically when they haven't paid the city taxes and the city is foreclosing, typically they haven't paid the other taxes as well. Not always, but typically. But, of course, it would be odd for us to withhold something from the auction in a case where we're not the ones who are foreclosing on it. I think if we were requested by the city, and I know the city's been in contact with us about it, I'm just saying it's a somewhat unusual situation than all the others that we've dealt with.
It's a really unusual property.
Because we are not the ones that are foreclosing on it. It's the city.
I think there's a willingness all around. I hope something good comes of this.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Dooley?
The one thing that wasn't mentioned is the city zoning would allow a four-story building there. The city needs to take care of this problem directly itself, and the Conservation Advisory Council of the city alerted all of the relevant stakeholders, and I trust that the city is recognizing the importance of this, as you said, Kathy.
So. Well, partly because it's being brought to public officials' attention, so I just want to applaud the folks that have been sending this around, because we might not have, and I'm speaking as a county legislator, I wouldn't have heard about it if I hadn't seen it on sustainability list and some other lists.
Martha.
Yes, thank you. So you said the list has been, you know, trimmed by a couple. And so in the next 2 months before the auction, you'll keep that kind of conversation going with as many property owners as possible?
Yes, definitely.
And does this list kind of ever go to DSS, sort of as a general, you know, here are some people. Do you have any history on any of these people?
No, not to my knowledge. I know we share it with the different municipalities, the supervisors, the clerks, the legislature here. I don't really have any contact that I've known up to now that we've given it to anybody there. Mm-hmm. Is there a suggestion that there's a particular department or division that I can interface with? You had mentioned help from the social services.
Right.
I talked to Helen about that. We have never received a check from social services for taxes.
No, it's not.
When the owner-occupied list comes out, that may be the right time to contact.
Yeah, it's if somebody is, if somebody has this kind of financial problem, you know, they're in many cases a client at DSS, or should be. Sometimes it's somebody who has never sought out public assistance in any way but would be eligible. So sometimes if those folks come to the attention of DSS, DSS reaches out to them. I had a neighbor in this situation once. And, you know, DSS and us, actually Office for the Aging, tried very hard to get her assistance so she could stay in the home. And there were complicated reasons that it didn't in the end work out, but she stayed in her home probably 2 years longer than she would have had they not gotten involved. So especially when Mr. Dennis, you know, brought, you know, came here, and that's why I just was thinking mm-hmm. about this as an option that, you know, it wouldn't, I would think, hurt, just even send this to Patricia Carey.
Sure.
And then she sends it to the right person to say, you know, are any of these people in your records, and do you, you know, is there any action that you can take?
All right, I think we understand the point. Rick, is there anything else on your report tonight?
No, Mike, that's it.
All right. Then let's move on. I do have some chair's appointments before we get into the consent agenda. These are on to the Workforce Development Board. Jennifer Tavares as a business representative. Jeffrey Madison as an adult education representative. Amy Hendricks as a youth-serving organization representative. Michael Tularski, labor organization representative. Mary Stasi, business representative. Carl Haynes,
Higher Education Representative, Michael Stamm, Economic Development Representative, Alan Bishop, Business Representative, Lisa Patz, Business Representative, and Joe Mariana, TANF Representative. We'll go to the consent agenda. We have some appointments out of committees. Out of the Public Safety Committee, we have to the Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, we have James Dennis. To the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, we have Martha Robertson. To the Government Operations Committee, from the Government Operations Committee to the Public Information Advisory Board, we have Sherry Negria. We also have some resolutions on consent, and if you want to talk about them, just say you'd like them off the consent agenda. Resolution A, authorization for the Tompkins County Assessment Department to enter into a four-year agreement to provide assessment services to the town of Covert and approval of related budget adjustment. That's ID 5495. B, budget adjustment, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. I'm sorry, did someone say? That one's off. Resolution C, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant for various projects, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. That is ID 5563. D, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number 11 with CNS Engineers, Inc. for energy modeling for the security improvements terminal expansion at Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5564. E is amendment of resolution number 2014-128 and 2014-154, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5565. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Dooley Kiefer, seconded by Martha Robertson. Any discussion? All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, we'll go next to Charter Review Committee, and we meet tomorrow at 3 p.m. here in these chambers to talk about charter. Any questions I can answer? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis.
Okay, I'm swallowing, sorry. Item F would be the adjustments to the 2015 budget, City of Ithaca Municipal Sales Tax Agreement, and I would move that.
All right, moving Resolution F. Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Resolution G is a 2015 budget appropriation and adjustments for the 2013-2014 retroactive wage increase, corrections officer unit local 2062, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion? This requires a short-form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Is there anyone who would like to be shown as opposed? That's unanimous.
What that means is that you obviously all know we've been negotiating with the corrections, and we have a contract that ends December 31st, 2014, and they will be paid accordingly, and we're back at the table with them for the upcoming years. Resolution H is the establishment of the 2016 county financial goal, and I will move that.
Moved. Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Many of you were at the retreat, and those who weren't have followed it very closely and know where we are. The county administrator gave us his impression on what should be done for the next year. And my sense was coming out of that meeting that there was general consensus that of the direction that the resolution shows. And let me just say a couple of things about it. How we are in the position that we're in 2015, moving to 2016, the cost of some of our mandated programs has gone down, which means that people are less dependent on the kind of assistance that we give in DSS. The pension issue has gone away somewhat for us. Those numbers are going down. And related to this thing, I read an article, and many of you probably have read, talking about the decrease in pension costs for municipalities. For those people who kicked theirs forward, they borrowed money to pay their pension costs in the bad years past, are now, you know, they have, the numbers are going down, and they have to start paying their money back. And we did not do that. We were able to kind of weather that storm by losing. We reduced our workforce by about 9%. Our unions were understanding and helped us out with their contracts through that bad time. And now we're at the point where the pensions have gone down, and it's an advantage to us. And it gives us the opportunity to do things a bit easier than it would have been had we been one of those who borrowed the money. Our sales tax collections are good. We'll be able to, even though in the first quarter the numbers were a little touchy, we're going to be able to move forward in this recommendation with a small increase in sales tax revenue for the next year. This will allow us to maintain current levels of department operations because of, as I mentioned, the reasonable wage growth we will be able to offer people in the future. And we're providing cost of living adjustments to TC3 and unsponsored agencies. We can also address certain critical priorities, library, replacing cars and computers, and investing in staff training. And we can still do this and stay within our property tax cap. One of the things the county administrator said, and I have to give him credit for this, is that the county is not getting bigger, but we're getting stronger. And we're able to, and that was a great line, I wish I had thought of it, but it's Joe's, and it really does typify what we're trying to do with the 2016 spending plan. So I would hope that all of you can support what this resolution and give the county administrator the ability to talk to our department heads and build budgets around that 1.3.
Arthur?
Thank you. I am delighted that it seems like either coming out of the economy, things are better, or it's the economy coming out of the doldrums, things are better, or maybe, in fact, that sort of mandate cap, not mandate relief, but cap on our Medicaid payments maybe is finally making a difference. So it was a more relaxed retreat than I've been through in 13 years. So I support the level that's in the second whereas. I have a couple of things on language that I would like to propose, and I sent them out today, and yeah, Kathy said, look, I don't want to reprint them. Did they get accepted?
Yeah, they got to me, and I will offer them now in the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth whereas. It's estimated 1.3 property tax levy is met, then the additional cost on a $165,000 median value Tompkins County home will be approximately $15 a year, and that's on the 2014 assessment.
So, Martha, are you moving an amendment?
Oh. Jim, did you say that? Then Kathy told me before the meeting. This was accepted by committee?
Yes.
Okay. So that was part of the resolution.
And was there's also a change in the second whereas?
And that was accepted also, and I I have it here, but I can't find it.
So what I had...
Go ahead and say what...
All right. So in order to just to kind of change the tone about the property tax cap, I was suggesting that it would say, whereas it's currently estimated that the 2016 property tax cap imposed on all local governments and school districts by New York State would be, instead of will be, would be approximately 1.3% for Tompkins County, which is equivalent to approximately $600,000 over the 2015 property tax levy. So eliminating the words, allowing the property tax levy to increase by, so if that's, you said the committee?
That's what we agreed to.
Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to vote? Let's have a roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes. Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No, but I'd like to say why. Do I get a chance to do that?
We're just voting at this point.
Okay.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote?
Well,
Dooley Kiefer, you want to change your vote?
I'm thinking of changing it because it's so clear to me that our county administrator wants to work with this number, and he has done a good job of convincing most of my colleagues that that's what's going to happen. It's not a target I support, which is why I voted no on the first go-round, but I will change it to yes so that our county administrator can do what he wants.
You wish to be recorded as yes?
I do.
Will Burbank.
By the same token, my uneasiness has not to do with the marvelous job that that Joe and Jim have done in bringing this forward, but a continued lack of support for the very concept of restraining yourself by this tax cap. But I am willing, for the sake of comedy, to change my vote.
You're willing to be recorded as yes?
Yes.
All right. The clerk will announce the vote, please.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. Thank you. All right, we go. Jim, are you done?
I'm really happy about being done. I am. Thank you.
Go to the old library committee, and I can report we've had actually two meetings since we met here last time. And the first one was to kind of go over the three responses to our RFP and talk about our procedures as we called each of them in to make presentations. We had the first presentation last Friday evening. I thought it went very well. The way we set that up was we gave the proposer, which was the Cornerstone Group out of Rochester, about 45 minutes to make a presentation. They had several people there, contractors and engineers and architects, all of that. They talked about what the project had to be, which was they wanted it to be, I should say, which is probably the largest number of units we have proposed. I'm trying to remember, was it 82 units that they were proposing, plus some on-site parking? And it was targeted for affordable senior housing. There would also be some community space that would be available in the building, including areas that they would invite Cornell Cooperative Extension to come in and make presentations. After they got done with their presentation, we had about, I'd say, about an equal amount of time in which legislators, including some that weren't on the committee, came and asked questions. We then turned to the audience. We probably had a half dozen people in the audience, and they asked good questions of the developer. The developer was very happy to respond to them. We had left some time for an executive session, if we needed it, to discuss some of the confidential financial information that had been submitted, but we did not need to get into that. And we went just the 2 hours we'd hoped to. So our next one will be this Friday. Please come if you'd like to hear it. And it is Travis Hyde, isn't it, is our next one, I believe. So that's what we've done, and we have another one the following week. Martha?
Are these on, I haven't checked, are they on the meeting portal so we can see the whole thing?
Okay. The answer is yes. Will?
So, Mike, as you know, I was there, and I found it enormously worthwhile. I would encourage everybody, even if you missed this first one, do it. It's not what I would have chosen to do on a Friday afternoon, but it was time well spent. My understanding, and it was videoed, so if you want to go back and see the video.
It was hard to get our committee together. In fact, as Kathy, after the last meeting, told me she was able to change her schedule so she's going to be able to make all the meetings. She was concerned she wasn't before, so that's important to have as many there as possible. Dooley?
I think it might have been 63 units and not 80.
It was.
You may be
it
right. I'm sorry. I wasn't positive about that. I'd have to go back and look at the booklet.
It is.
Thank you, Dooley.
63 units and two levels of affordability.
Right. But it was still the largest number of units of the three proposals that have come in. And they are asking for tax abatements, by the way. Okay, can we move on to Public Safety Committee? Nathan Shinagawa is our chair.
Yes, well, you heard the update from Paula, and so I only have one resolution. That's the appropriation from Contingent Fund, Terminal Pay, Sheriff's Office.
Is there a second? Dooley? Ready to vote on this one? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
I'm taking it back. We've got to have a short form roll call. Good thing Kathy's here to keep me straight.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Anything else, Nathan?
Nope, that concludes my report.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
I do not have any report, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any questions?
No, I think I just lied to you. Sorry.
Well, go ahead.
I'm so sorry, colleagues. We are in the process of trying to formulate some dates where we can share with county employees, because it's important since they were the main participants in our workplace climate survey, to share with them results of that survey and sort of next steps. So Joe, Paul, and I had a chance to meet. Paula gave a presentation to department heads on the results, similar to what some of us received when we met with the vendor who did the work for us, and we hope to do the same throughout county government so that all our employees have an opportunity to hear it as well as respond. So that is our plan that's in the works. We are looking also towards our legislature department heads retreat. We're going to be looking at a date to plan that, where we will also make sure that all legislators have an opportunity to get that briefing as well, and to be able to ask questions and share feedback. So that's where we are in terms of our process.
Questions? Dooley?
I guess I don't understand. I assumed that the legislature would get briefed sooner rather than later. You've already given it to department heads, so waiting for a legislative department head retreat for us to hear seems...
So, Dooley, if you can tell me when would be a really good time for all legislators to get a briefing, an hour long, on this, I would appreciate it, because we thought about that as well. But we're stuck, and when would be a really good time? 10 minutes at a legislature meeting will not work for that.
And it needs to be an hour, not 30 minutes?
It's we would say about an hour long.
Because an obvious time is at one of our meetings.
So that's one of the things that we're looking at. I mean, we can talk about it and see if we can condense, but I would say, you know, between presentation and questions, we're probably looking at no less than 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Don't try Friday afternoons, they're taken.
So we did think of that, Julie. I just want you to know that, yes, we were not trying to wait for a very long time, but we're hoping to have sort of a meeting sooner rather than later of all legislators.
I thought we would know by now.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Anything else for any other questions? Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. We have not met since the last meeting, so I have nothing to report on that. I have two resolutions here. First is Resolution Tango, appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay of the Health Department, and I'll move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer, and it is Resolution T. Short form roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
Thank you. And now Resolution U, use appropriation from the contingent fund terminal pay for the Health Department, ID 5497, and I'll move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Again, short form roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
And our next meeting will be a couple of days from now on Thursday at 4 o'clock in the usual place.
Any questions for Peter? Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna, chairs.
F&I has not met since the last legislator meeting, and we will be meeting this coming Monday at 3:30 in these chambers. And I have one resolution to bring forward. That is ID 5527, appropriation for contingent fund, terminal pay, highway division.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Terminal pay, we need a short form roll call on this one too, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
That concludes my report.
Any questions? Go to Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you. We did our two resolutions on the energy program that we handled at the committee, and we met yesterday, and you'll see tourism capital grant applications in the next legislature agenda that we did yesterday. I wanted to just quickly mention that we had a very informative report from Sue Dale Hall, the director of the Child Care Council, which actually covers Cortland County as well as Tompkins. I've been concerned that one of the things that we don't talk at all about is the sort of quiet crisis of families trying to manage child care needs, and wanted us to sort of pay more attention to that. She said the gaps are especially, I mean, kind of what we hear all the time, non-traditional hours of care. So for people who are doing weekend work or shift work, evening work, that sort of thing, and infant and toddler care. There are some bright spots. For example, TC3 has a child care center, and they're expanding a bit and going to include slots for infants. And so that's a good model and something that's working well. She said the cost really continues to rise, and we're well schooled in the idea that for housing, the federal definition is that paying about 30% of your income for your housing costs is considered, you know, reasonable, and anything above 30% is not really affordable in a household budget. Well, that number for child care is 15%. And she said in this community, families earning a median income are generally paying 23% of their gross income not 15%, but an additional half again as much at 23% of their income for child care. And one parent with one child, if that parent is earning $32,000, they're earning too much for a subsidy, for any sort of child care support through DSS. And that parent would typically pay about 27% of their gross income for child care for that one child. And again, if you've got more than one child, just imagine the difficulty. So she said it really is a tremendous issue for families, jobs that are especially difficult to match for child care for the slots that exist are food service, hotel workers, and health care aides in particular. And she hoped that we might keep that in mind as we, you know, as we talk about what kinds of new jobs we're bringing into the county. We also had a very interesting report by Julia Maddock and Michael Stamm and Martha Armstrong from CCAD about the title was Unemployment, Urban and Rural Poverty, and Economic Development, kind of ways to help. And this is basically an answer to Peter Stein's question at a previous meeting of, you know, why do we need to still look for ways to build economic development? We have the lowest unemployment rate in the state. They pointed out that unemployment rate, while better than most other places, really masks a tremendous level of economic stress on our families. That if you work, for example, and get $10 an hour working full time, you're making just $20,000 a year, and that's that's poverty level for a family of three. So those are somebody's making that person has a job, and you're calling it a full time job, but if it's $10 an hour, you can't really make it in this county, and that's why we have 5,000. Households getting food stamps. They cannot put food on the table all month. So have the unemployment rate really masks the problem that we have the costs of child care, housing, and transportation that are really excessive. Interestingly, they did talk about, you know, we do have job opportunities that come up, including for entry level folks without, say, you know, advanced education, but this just sort of jumped out at me that this community doesn't really have a history of sort of manufacturing skills. So, you know, sort of our mainstay, of course, is education followed by healthcare. So, for example, if BorgWarner added 100 jobs, Michael said that 70% of those would be filled by people from outside Tompkins County. So we may be, oh, it's great, BorgWarner is open, you know, is expanding, but we end up with our residents don't necessarily have the background and the skills or the interest to fill those jobs. So these ED people are really working hard on new training opportunities for advanced manufacturing and really helping to bring people along in being able to match the jobs that are here and that we can be proud of. So it was an informative meeting, and I want a lot to digest and want to stay in touch and follow through on some of the questions that were raised. So our next meeting is Monday, June 1st, and that's my report.
Questions for Martha? Leslie.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. Martha, I do want to thank you for that, because I don't think that this community or people really understand the magnitude of the necessity of child care and the magnitude of how expensive it is for people and regular working people. I know for my own self, I used to sit here some nights and cringe when my mom couldn't take care of Indira. For a nighttime child care, you're paying $20 an hour. When these meetings go on, I'm looking at paying, you know, for that. And you think about people who just can't afford it. They're making a small amount of money, and even a $10 an hour child care, it is extremely, extremely expensive. But not only do we lack child care facilities here in the county, but affordable ones are not there. And for the child care provider, you know, they have to have a certain amount of insurance. There are regulations the state is constantly putting down. You can't have this kind of sand, can't have that kind of gravel. People have to spend money, and so they have to recoup those costs in order to provide the service. So it's a catch-22 all around. And, you know, I'm going to use this opportunity to say why I beg and plead with our employers in this county to pay people even beyond the living wage, because, you know, even $2 more for many of those families at $12.92, that's the living wage number, doesn't make it, you know, cut it for them. So, you know, if we're able to, we'll get quality workers, we'll get quality level workers if they can afford to pay their bills. You decide between paying for child care or paying your rent.
Right. So the
really
result is
rough.
Very often that people are forced to accept situations for their kids that aren't ideal.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And we understand that. I think we probably all lived through that to some degree. My first career was teaching in daycare, and you know, I saw it firsthand. And then, you know, of course, at the cost you're talking about, the child care worker isn't making,
they're not making any
anything.
Money.
So I would like to have Patricia Carey come in to talk to us about, for example, the DSS role and what kind of subsidies there are. I'm going to be looking at, say, the director from TC3. And you know, I think there must be ways that we can make a difference here. This is one of those things that parents kind of hang on by their fingernails, just waiting for their kids to be either old enough to be in full day school or old enough to like be okay by themselves, and it's not good for anybody.
No.
Thanks.
Peter?
I'd just like to make a comment, if I may. A couple of years ago, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I took a trip in the summertime for a 2-week trip to Iceland and just drove around. It was a fascinating trip. But the thing, of all the things I saw, including waterfalls that were more impressive than Niagara Falls and these spouts that came pushing up, the thing that really shocked me when I saw it was driving in a small town and looking, there was a place where there was a bunch of babies, people going around holding babies and little kids running around. And I said, what's that? They said, oh, well, that's a school. We have universal education for everyone older than 6 months or something like that. I may have that number wrong, but that's what I remember it. And I looked at that, absolute shock. And I said, you know, I thought at the time, you know, our nation was the first place in the whole world that made free public education available to everybody over the age of 6. And how could we have fallen so far where now Iceland, little country, okay, does the same thing for its people and nobody pays anything from it? And I couldn't forget that. I mean, it just stuck me. So.
Thank you, Peter.
And just if, you know, in case anybody thinks, oh, that's a bleeding heart liberal kind of idea, the economic value of women's work would be magnified, you know, tremendously. More women get doctorates in this country than men at this point. But because of child care, that potential is only marginally you know, used. So, realized. Thanks.
Thank you, Martha. Let's go to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met on April 28th. We got a long report from the airport about a number of things that are going on there. The current cafe, the business that runs the cafe, is wanting to get out of that business. So they're going to be issuing an RFP to get a new business in there to run the food concession. So if anybody's aware of a local food service business that might be interested, have them contact the airport manager. There was a report about the de-icing fluid that's been an issue sometime over the last few years. That it may have gotten out of its containment area from time to time over the years. This year they put in a new procedure at the airport, and it seems to have worked to have contained it in the way that it's supposed to be contained. You may remember that we're going to be putting in a solar array at the airport, and there's some talk about maybe changing the location of where that solar array is going to go. It's still going to be in the airport grounds, but the idea would be to push it over all the way to one side next to the Cornell solar array, which is, you know, on a neighboring property. I guess they need to get permission from the FAA to do that. And nothing else would change about it except for the location. There was some talk earlier in this meeting about properties that are removed, that are foreclosed upon, but then removed from auction. And there was one that happened last year. This was a 1.7-acre parcel in the village of Freeville. And what's hopefully will happen with that is that it's going to be sold to INHS/Better Housing in Tompkins County to do a housing project sometime in the future. That decision will be made in the next few weeks, and I believe it has to come to the full legislature, so you'll be hearing about that again. Everything else that we did at the meeting is contained somewhere else in this meeting today, in resolutions or wherever. And our next meeting is Tuesday, May 26th, 3:30, here in the chambers.
Questions for Dan? Let's go to Jim, then Martha.
Dan, the result of this vote, the sparkler vote, was 6-7. Am I correct in that? Who didn't vote, or was there?
Carol Chalk is not here tonight.
Oh, yeah, 13. Okay, I'm sorry. So what happens now? I mean, nothing passed.
So nothing changes. It's as it was before, which is it's illegal in Tompkins County to have sparklers and use sparklers.
That it is
Martha?
Illegal?
Illegal, just like it was before today, and it continues to be illegal.
But you can buy them at the commons market.
Yes, you can buy them in a number of places. I didn't know they were illegal.
Yeah, well, oh, that's good. So everyone will be happy then.
Martha Robertson.
I pulled resolution B. That's
yeah, are we ready for the resolutions?
Okay.
Yeah. Are we done with questions for Dan? Okay, let's do your resolutions, Dan.
Okay, so resolution B, budget adjustment, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport.
Your second. Seconded by Dave McKenna. Martha?
So I pulled it because it was a little unusual, first, that the fringe amount seemed was so high and would like a little more explanation, but also because this was part of a three-year initiative where we were trying to encourage, you know, the stability of the airport, but especially the make it more attractive for the airlines to stay with us, to be here. And so then we found that the $126,000 didn't really matter to them. Okay, so it gets reallocated. You know, I would support this, you know, for this year, but then I'm confused because this was a three-year plan that we would forego that $126,000. So I wasn't sure if that was, if this is going to be the plan for the second and third year, and I guess I'm not sure about that, about supporting it for the second and third years.
Joe, do you want to field this one?
Yeah, I'll try or at least get it started. You know, when we brought this to the legislature last budget time, we talked about whether it should be a guaranteed three-year deal, and we acknowledged at that time, although we prefer that it be a three-year plan, I think we also said we'll bring it back every year. So the legislature will have another look at it every year at budget time. So I think that was our understanding with the legislature. Still, I think we're going to need that 3 years to be able to dig out of the situation that we're in right now with respect to emplanements. So I think we need that period of time to grow ourselves back. Mm-hmm. Even at budget time last year, we were beginning to rethink where that help should be targeted. Even then, it was clear that the airlines, so that the effect on fees and charges to the airlines, while we are higher than most other places, the airlines have some tolerance for that. So the thought was, even then, and we were I think clear in the budget presentation, we're going to take some time and look at where that money can be directed to have a better impact. So that's where it's gone over the past few months. There are some things in here that are relatively routine and ongoing that have to be covered. So for example, there's an item in here for the airport firefighter and operations technicians. So that's the product of a petition for a reclassification by those employees. There are 8 or 9 of them. And that's their right. And it's our obligation as the employer to take a serious look at it, as we did. And in the end, it was found that there was a reclass warranted, not as much as they had asked for, but one that was warranted. So in terms of those funds and where that money goes, there isn't other money in that budget to cover that particular part of what's on your sheet. So there's $23,415, and there's a part of the fringe item in there as well, just to be able to cover the cost of those reclassifications. There are professional services that will be allowed through this. That's really important. You know, one of them is Ewan Barr. There'll be other consultants working on grants, because we want to go after grants, small communities grants, other grants to help with some of the building projects. So that money is being spent in those areas. And then the last category, the large fringe item, when the budget was put together, there was uncertainty about whether, with Mike Hall's situation coming in as an interim manager, whether there would be a fringe benefit charge that would go along with that. So the fringe cost for that position was not put in the 2015 budget. So a part of this, Mike left his job to take this job on the interim basis, which is probably a midterm basis. So there's a fringe obligation, too, that we're addressing through this. So that's how the money is allocated. Now, with respect to what's happening, to be able to rebuild the employment numbers, the business numbers, there's a great deal of conversation underway right now with the airlines. So as we said we would do, we've made contact with airlines. Mike and his staff and his consultants are in direct contact with airlines. They're in contact with, they've had set up meetings with the major employers in town and airlines, to show the major employers is a gain to be had by working with the airlines. We are in, I'd call them active discussions about what else we can do with respect to routes. You've heard Mike talk about how difficult the destinations are for us. They all get shut down when the weather is bad and things like that. So by targeting the money this way, we have given ourselves the capacity to really drive that discussion about what else can we do as an airport to build up our numbers.
Okay, well, the $42,000 for the consultants, that seems to be time limited.
Yep.
It seems like the rest of it is going to Target. That's going to add to the base for the airport.
It will be recurring. That's correct. So as the airport grows out of its current situation, I mean, it's going to have to find its own money to pay for these things after our three-year arrangement, if we decide to keep it that long, ends.
Okay, and just one other thing. You've got this airport firefighter technician position both in the resolution and in the memo. It just says position singular. When you say aid,
it's a class of employees, yes.
Okay, that really helps us understand what's going on here. It's eight people. It's very different from one. So, okay, thank you.
Kathy?
Thank you. I'm glad that Martha pulled this out to clarify some of this. I have ambivalence about us going down this, and I hate slippery slope arguments, but where we're starting without, by fiat, without having really made the policy change to start supporting the airport's budget when it was always an enterprise. It's more than irony to me that a county that tries so hard to work on its carbon footprint feels the need to support, for reasons of economic development and others, travel by plane. I'm as much of a hypocrite. I don't fly a million times a year, but for me to go visit Texas, there's really no practical way to do it in the time that I can manage to get down there. And yet, it's not really a sustainable way to travel. And it's been shown in the past that our big employers utilize it, and yet everybody pays for it when we do it the way that we're going down this road. So I will support this year. And, of course, those jobs are great jobs. They're not always, in my opinion, how can I put this, the airport is just now beginning to be more diverse. I think it has a long way to go. But those are good jobs, and I understand they're wanting to be more classified differently. But in terms of supporting the airport's budget, I'd like for us to be a little more transparent in how we go about doing that and actually make it a policy vote, because I think things have changed over the year to the point that it probably could get past the legislature, even though I would vote against it, and I think many city residents would find the burden onerous if it was out there. So I'd just like to caution everybody where I am with this. It's not a place that I think that the average taxpayer necessarily recognizes what they would be paying for businesses to be able to transport their employees in and out of Tompkins County as well as whoever comes in. And I know that we haven't had the support recently from Cornell that we used to have, and that a lot of the lack of employments might be, well, not a lot of it, the situation might be improved if we would have more cooperation from those large employers. And certainly as a taxpayer, I would like to see that because, again, and I will say this again, I think they get most of the benefit from it.
Okay, on Resolution B, are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Dan, I think you have another resolution. Z.
I do. This is Resolution Z, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, assessment department.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. Short form roll call, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous. Anything else for Dan? Then we go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Thanks. I'm sorry. We're meeting on Wednesday, the 20th, at 3:30. For committee members who all wish to move our meeting time to 3 p.m., that has not yet been able to be accomplished, so we're still meeting at 3:30 this Wednesday. But it's not out of the question. We'll talk about it again at committee. And you already heard that the updated foreclosure report will come to peak on the 20th. Other than that, I don't have any news about our agenda.
Any questions for Dooley? Thank you, Dooley.
Yes.
Jim Dennis, could we take Resolution BB that we added?
Yes, we can.
What about AA?
Come to that. That's where we, this one was added to the agenda.
Before I do this, excuse me, I did not say thank you to Joe, Kevin, and all the work that was done to be at the retreat and give us the proposal that you all supported this evening. I thank all of you, and clearly Joe and Kevin and those people put that together. My resolution is in honor of former Tompkins County Board of Representative member Stuart W. Stein, and I would move that.
May I have a unanimous second for that, please?
Yes.
All right, that's unanimous. Any discussion? Can we vote? Jim?
I moved it. Let me just make one comment. When I first came on City Council in 1974, Ed Conley was the mayor, Gutenberger was there, John, Stu Stein was. I replaced Stuart Stein in the 7th district, 7th ward. There was some, you know, we were switching wards, and I don't know if the city got a good deal or not on that switch, but at any rate, I used to sit in a room with Stein, Gene Angel, John Gutenberger, Ed Conley, and the architect for the Commons, and Tony Egner, and I was always amazed at, I mean, I just kept very quiet because these were players in the community, and Stuart Stein was led a lot of things that happened in the city of Ithaca, a lot of great things, and I was sorry to be out of town on Sunday and miss the thing, but man was amazing. That's all.
Ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Now let's go to Resolution AA. Dooley Kiefer.
Thank you. First thing I need to tell you is that the title is wrong.
I'm not voting for it.
Somehow when it got retyped, it says it's a no-charge zone, and it's supposed to say a no-discharge zone. This is a topic that was brought to me by the...
Moving it, Dooley?
I'd like to move it, yes.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein.
The planning department brought me this and asked if I would introduce it. The EPA has looked at Cayuga Lake, Seneca Lake, and the Seneca River and determined that it has adequate pump-out facilities, that therefore the DEC should be able to have this be a no-discharge zone for vessels on the lake. And the EPA and DEC have opened this proposal up for public comment, and the planning department hoped the legislature would take a position by way of making public comment. So that's what this resolution is. It was presented to me by the planning department. And I'm happy to move it. I briefly thought about, should I have a special meeting of PEAK before this legislative meeting? We've had one before every legislative meeting, and it did not seem sensible to do that. That's why it's a member-filed resolution. And I hope you all will support it.
Questions for Dooley? Kathy?
I'm pleased to support this. I'm curious as to how the EPA foresees enforcement of this or how it's done.
Yes, well, probably by complaint, as everything else seems to be enforced these days.
Thank you.
But there's going to be signage up all around the lake telling people about this.
Okay, ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Dooley, for bringing that to us.
Thank you.
Let's take the minutes of April 21st. Someone want to move those? Martha Robertson, seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. I'm sorry, Dooley's opposed. Any unfinished business tonight? Do I have a motion to adjourn? By Will Burbank, seconded by Dave McKenna. All in favor of adjourning, please say aye. Thank you all. Thank you for the folks up in our control room. Thank you, Kathy Covert. Thank you, Marsha Lynch. Thanks, everybody.